to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 1st of June, 1994.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you good evening, good morning in some areas, and welcome to that first and or last hour of Coast to Coast AM PM. Which is what I guess I have to call it at this hour. There's not really much choice, is there? The Reverend Heber Gentsch, I believe somewhere down near the L.A. area, probably. Reverend Gentsch, good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Welcome to the program.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and how are things out your way?
Things are dry and well, thank you, after some storms raging over the high desert here. Reverend Gentsch, what in the world is Scientology? What actually is it?
Well, first of all, Scientology is an applied religious philosophy. It deals with you as an individual, you as a spiritual being. We understand that man is a spiritual being, that he has a mind, which is not your brain. I know the psychiatrists say it's your brain. It's not your brain. And you have a body, and that you can affect the body through the mind. We also, it's not a belief system or a dogma. It is a religion which is based upon scientific principles and which draws the Eastern thought of how the whole concept of man as a spiritual being from the East, and then uses Western technology to combine and to help the person understand who he is, what he is, where he's going, what he's doing. And it is something which is, you use practical rules and principles in Scientology to remove past problems, past stops in your life, traumatic incidents of the past, which then gives you a better capability to do what you want to do to achieve your goals in present time. So it is not something which people just believe. It's not something which is just a dogma. It is something which a person can apply in his life and see changes in his life. And again, it's not a thing where you have to believe in something for it to occur. It's you do something yourself using the principles of Scientology. You make up your own mind whether it works. Doesn't matter what I say or whether what you say or what anybody else says. You discover for yourself its workability, and that's its value. It's a very practical, applied religious philosophy.
Well, I certainly understand the aspect of the mind affecting the body and you being a summation of your history. That certainly all makes sense. Is Scientology a religion?
Yes, I mean, you know, religion comes from the word religare, to bind back. Religion has always dealt with the concept of the human spirit. Nothing else has ever dealt with that. And it's always been the province of religion, at least. And Scientology certainly fits that. In fact, on October the 1st in 1993, the Church of Scientology has got full recognition by the Internal Revenue Service for all of its churches and its various public organizations, charitable organizations, recognizing that they were established and are established for religious and charitable purposes. Further, that ended a 40-year war that we had with the Internal Revenue Service. But in doing so...
Why did you have that war, Reverend? I mean, what was the contention of the IRS?
Well, it was interesting. We had gotten into a long-term battle based on the fact that in 1950, 21 days after Mr. Hubbard wrote the book Dianetics, Modern Science of Mental Health, the American Money Association... better known probably as American Medical Association, along with the American Psychiatric Association, got together and issued papers and letters to each other at first saying, I don't know what this is, but we don't like it. Let's get rid of it. They felt that if psychosomatic illnesses could be resolved, and which they could by the man in the street who had now for the first time workable technology which dealt with the mind, it would encroach upon a very lucrative area of their control.
I see. Well, and to give that Reverend, a little power, there was a study that came out the other day about people who are given pills, sugar pills, you know, that do absolutely nothing. 60, or I forget, perhaps 70% of them had a positive reaction because they thought they were getting something that was going to cure them.
Sure, and, you know, it shows the power of the mind. And, of course, when Dianetics came out, Mr. Hubbard discovered that the mind was composed of pictures, that people recorded things in the mind by making pictures of things. I mean, if I ask you what you had for breakfast, you probably get a picture of what you had for breakfast right there.
Sure.
It's a way of recording it. But then there's the other side of the mind, which is called the reactive mind. And that mind deals with moments of pain or unconsciousness or threat or loss and that sort of thing. And that mind is just below one's consciousness, but it can affect an individual because things are said. And it's interesting, Mr. Hubbard brought this out in 1950, but at that time he was way ahead of his time, and he said, look, when people talk around an unconscious person, it can affect them. I've seen a lot of press in the last 5-6 years saying that the doctors are saying they should be quiet in the operating room because things that are said affect the person adversely.
It's true.
Well, that was something which he brought out back in 1950. So, you know, I was thinking of a sort of a classic case, an individual who fell from a cliff about 20 or so feet in Hawaii while he was doing climbing, and people stood around, and he was unconscious and saying, boy, it looks like he'll never walk again, and he'd broken his legs. Anyway, he went to a hospital and his legs were healed, but he had an extreme difficulty walking. There was nothing physically wrong with him. But again, by using Dianetics, he was able to go back in time to sort of rerun that subconscious tape, that video recording, if you will, or that tape recording of what had occurred, and then heard the people saying, oh, he'd probably never walk again, and so forth. And that restored his capability to walk because it was psychosomatic.
All right, well then, why is Scientology more than a placebo?
Well, because it's an exact technology of how to deal with the mind. It's a way of approaching that subconscious part of the mind in what we call Dianetics, meaning through the mind, going back and locating the exact moment of pain or unconsciousness, what was said, being able to review that, and, you know, without drugs, without hypnosis or anything like that. Anyone can do it who can read a book and read Dianetics. There's ways listed in there to do that. But it's a very precise technology. And when I say technology, that probably is something people don't necessarily understand, but technology indicates that it's something, if you do it repetitively, you can always get a result. Well, that is what is new in the spirit. And my Dianetics has now sold almost 17 million copies internationally, and Mr. Hubbard's works on Scientology, Dianetics, and other writings now number about 155 million in the public arena.
That's a lot of books sold, all right. What about the actual religious aspect? In other words, what does Scientology teach about God and religion in general?
Well, first of all, we hold that an individual may have his own particular belief system about what God is. It's not a dogma, so we don't tell him that this is what God is. But we do say there is a supreme being. We recognize that there is a supreme being. And since Scientology is pan-denominational, people can come in from all kinds of religions. In fact, a lot of times you'll find out that people will have a dual membership. They may be Jewish, and they might be Scientologists at the same time. But they'll have their own concept of what God is. And I think we sort of approach it from the Buddhist tradition, which is you understand yourself first as a spiritual being, and then later on you can understand your relationship to the supreme being. I'm simplifying this a lot, you know.
That's fine. I think I appreciate that. What happens to us when we die, Reverend?
Well, we come back, Art. And, you know, that's an interesting concept. Not reincarnation, where the concept people come back as animals or whatever, other things. Man, you know, a spiritual being comes back in a body and lives again. Now, you know, I realize that that sort of goes against a lot of the Western tradition, but it's certainly something which has been billions of people have followed for years and years in
yes.
the Eastern tradition. So
oh,
it's
yes.
more, it's more in the Eastern tradition, you live again, and one has more than one life. And, of course, that's kind of interesting, too, because, Mr. Hubbard found this with Dianetics back in 1950, and he said, well, this is a phenomena that people talk about having lived before.
Yes.
And then I read this stuff in the last 3 or 4 years, and there's people hopping on the bandwagon as if that was something that they had totally discovered anew, finding that if you counsel people about having lived in past lives, that they lived better lives, they felt better, they had a greater health. So these, Mr. Hubbard was way ahead of his time when he wrote the book Dianetics, Modern Science, and Mental Health.
How did you get to be president of Scientology? How does that happen?
Well, Art, that was something where I have been in Scientology now for almost 28 years. In fact, this year marks my 28th year in Scientology. And at the time when the Church of Scientology International was established back in 1981, by that time I had been in Scientology for almost 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had worked for the church, by that time I'd been a full-time staff member for a little over 10 years. And the board of directors was formed, and at that time they were looking for someone to be the president, and since I had established myself as a executive and worked for the church for all those years, it was decided that I would be the president, and that's I was the first president, and I've been that president since 1981.
No little puffs of smoke rising from Scientology headquarters or anything, I take it. In other words, you don't have that sort of a pomp and circumstance.
No, it's funny you mentioned that. I guess not. You know, it's just we're hardworking folks, and you know, we recognize that. No, I see what you're saying. No, I find when you said the puffs of smoke. You know, I live here in L.A. and we've had riots and everything else and earthquakes, and for a second I just shifted my attention. But I see what you're saying. No, there's no papal bull there. There's no. No such thing. It's not a not something like that.
All right.
I missed the humor for a second, but no. No, people who are in Scientology hold positions of trust based on their competence and their long years of service.
Okay.
But it's not something where, you know, there's some sort of I'm very direct. It's not a divine appointment or something like that. No.
All right. Nevertheless, you are a reverend.
That's right. I mean, but I also studied extensively to do that. You know, understand that I, before I came into the Church of Scientology, that I went to college and I graduated from the University of Utah out there in Salt Lake City. So I know what it takes in terms of getting a degree and the kind of study that one does for the various subjects in order to major in those subjects. In order for me to become a minister, I spent just for that particular level the equivalent of 4 years in college and a major to arrive at that particular point. So there are basic studies that one does, learning about the mind, learning about the counseling techniques of Scientology, which are very precise and very well articulated. So I had to do all of that before I became a minister.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a regimen. It's not something easily or simply given to an individual. There is a good deal of study involved.
I'm sure there is. How big is Scientology? Will you tell how many members you have?
We now have over 8 million members internationally. We are located in 102 countries. We now have some 1,500 organizations internationally. Scientology and its books and works have been translated into over 40 different languages. And you know, Scientology has been growing tremendously in Europe. The Dianetics books are very popular in Russia right now. And Germany, of all places, where we have probably the greatest amount of problems dealing with the old neo-fascism problems over there. At the same time, Scientology is growing very strongly in that country.
I could imagine Scientology would grow very quickly indeed in Russia. It's very troubled right now. There have not been a lot of traditional religions there. And so it just would thrive. It would make sense that it would thrive in Russia.
Well, there have been 70 years of the teachings of no religion, except for some of the folks who've, you know, lived through that time and There really has not been a religion in Russia per se, but at the same time, you'll find that Russians are they are concerned. They have a sort of a Western approach in terms of science. They want something which works, and so they are inquisitive in that direction. But there is a resurgence in religion in Russia, and certainly there are the conflicts where the Russian Orthodox Church, coming back into power, is concerned about other religions. But, of course, Russia has always been a place of many different ethnicities and different religions if one looks at the traditions going back through the centuries. So it certainly isn't something new. Scientology, though, in that sense, is new, in that we're talking about the precision of counseling. We're talking about a way to understand the mind, a way to understand oneself spiritually. So there is a large appeal in Russia. I will say that is quite true.
All right. I'm familiar with some forms of Buddhism, and there is a fairly radical sect of Buddhism that's come into America now, known as, I believe, Nichiren Shoshu, Soka Gakkai. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard of Soka Gakkai and Nichiren Shoshu. I'm not terribly familiar with their teachings, but when you say radical...
From a Buddhist, mainline Buddhist perspective. And so I'm sure you're sensitive to that word, radical. Do people regard you as radical? As a matter of fact, how do the traditional religions in America respond? Do they regard Scientology as a threat, an evil, or how do they regard it?
No, I think that, that's changed quite a bit. I think there was a bit of controversy back, certainly there was controversy back in the 60s and 70s, and but over the last 5 or 7 years, it's changed quite a bit. As a matter of fact, Church Scientology was quite involved with 63 other organizations, all the mainline religions in the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. That was the famous Smith case that occurred up there in the Pacific Northwest, where essentially the Supreme Court ruled that the First Amendment and religion was not an inalienable right, but a privilege granted by the state. So we worked along side by side with Catholics, with Mormons, with Baptists, with the Protestants, with Jewish faith. I mean, it was an incredible gathering together of all religions, and Scientology was very much involved in that. In fact, I had the opportunity to go back there and to speak when Clinton signed that into law, and we were called by the White House and invited to the White House. I think that's over, and I think the recognition of the Church of Scientology by the Internal Revenue Service, and by the way, that was the most assiduous, exhaustive examination in the history of this country that was done on the Churches of Scientology to see whether or not they should pass scrutiny and to receive, as an entire organization, their recognition as religious and charitable organizations and being established for religious and charitable purposes. We passed that test. So, no, I think that conflict is gone. I think there might be some residual noise out there, but Scientology has arrived as a religion, and certainly I work with Catholics, I work with Jewish people, I work with people of all faiths. In fact, I'm a member of a group called the American Conference on Religious Movements. It's been around for 8 years, and, there are Catholics, there are Methodists, Protestants on that board. The head of the dean of the religious studies at Catholic University, William Sankmere, is on the board, and myself, and a friend of mine, Mose Durst, from the Unification Church. And we have brought together religions of all kinds and created dialogues with this organization for the last 8 years.
Reverend, I know you have had your own recent dealings with the federal government, the IRS, I guess, so I'm curious, how do you view, we only have about a minute here, how do you view what happened in Waco, Texas?
Well, I think that Nancy Ammerman's report, which was part of the Justice Department's report, is a very key point to look at. And the fact that Nancy Ammerman brought up the fact that the anti-religious group activities, I call them the Criminal Association Network, their involvement in inciting that Waco situation is something which she was deeply concerned about. That was one major point that she brought up, that they were the inciters of that issue. And the other point she brought out, which was extremely important, was the failure of the agencies involved, FBI, ATF, to use religious people who understood what the situation was, who offered their services to do negotiations and so forth, and they were denied that right to do it.
All right, we have to break off there. We're at the bottom of the hour. Reverend, hold on. We'll be right back to you.
Okay, great.
The Reverend Heber Jentsch, president of Scientology, is my guest. We'll be back.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 1st of June, 1994.
Now back to Reverend Jentsch. Hi there.
Hi. As we finished off, I wanted to sort of finish off a piece of that communication.
Yes.
And you asked about Waco. And not only Nancy Ammerman's presentation to the Justice Department is important, I've had the opportunity to meet with a number of religious leaders around the country who were deeply, deeply disturbed about what occurred down there. And I know that James Dunn, who is the head of the Joint Baptist Committee representing, I don't know, about 30 million Baptists in America, and the former director, James Wood, who was at Baylor University right there in Waco. James Wood is there. James Dunn is in Washington, D.C. Both were extremely concerned about this, and James Dunn and Dean Kelly, the National Council of Churches Religious Freedom Committee, both offered to go in there, and I know others who did the same and were denied the opportunity to go in there. What they were told was, well, we have our own professionals, and what they depended upon were psychiatrists and, of course, these people here from the Criminal Association Network. There's an article written in The Nation by Alexander Coburn, May 9th, 1994, and people might pick that up because it's a rather strong analysis of what occurred in that situation down there, and it involves the person who had held one of the Davidians for 5 days over here in Glendale, California, and, quote, deprogrammed him and then taken him to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms as a former Davidian and used him as a key person to file complaints against the Davidians. And, again, it was indicated by Ammerman's report that taking people with such extreme animosity as was presented here to then express themselves against that group really did not serve a good purpose. And, of course, it was horrible. I just came back from Europe 2 days ago, and people over there are appalled such a thing happened. They are terrified about such a thing, and I was interested. The commentary comes down to this. At a place called East Grinstead, there's a St. Swithin's Church. And as you walk around the yard, and I just saw this last week, there are three tombstones. And in Latin, it is the ashes of the last three witches which were buried in 1567, or 1557, burned at the stake in England. And it says, they were of the other faith. So my point simply being that the hysteria being generated here in America has really a two-sided, sort of seems to be two-sided at least, but the point is we have plurality of religion over here. You know, there's only one church in England. It's the Anglican Church. Other churches are registered as religious charitable organizations. That's kind of fascinating. There's just that one church. Over here we have a plurality. There are a lot of different churches. That's how the Constitution was set up. And I just want to make a point that religions do have a right to exist in America. They may be different, and they may have different different philosophies, different religions, but that is America, and that's what's made America strong. And I think the respect for each other's religions is extremely important, and it's something that should be developed rather than something which should be played against each other.
Is Scientology a fairly open-minded religion? In other words, it's very inclusive or not?
It's very inclusive because people of all religions join Scientology, and I mean, we've had people who, as I say, from many different faiths and even no faith, because as one becomes a part of Scientology and studies it, one finds that he has a greater understanding of himself, a greater feeling for others, and then he wants to help other people. And I think that's why we've been able to take 100,000 people off of drugs. Again, we have a very an existing technology that deals with drug addiction and drug problems, and we've been able to deal with that. We've also...
I've got another hot potato for you. What is Scientology's attitude on homosexuality? Earlier in the day, Reverend, our Surgeon General said that lesbians should be allowed to join the Girl Scouts. That was a follow-on to her earlier remark that homosexuals ought to be able to join the Boy Scouts. What is Scientology's attitude?
Well, we don't tell people what their sexual preferences should be. It's an individual's choice. So we don't come out and say, well, it's got to be this way or it's got to be that way.
Well, then you're almost the libertarians of religion, aren't you?
I guess we are in a way. You know, we certainly don't get into dogmatic things. You know, what is important is the spiritual side of the individual and his spiritual development and growth. And he has to look at those things that prevent him from achieving it, you know. And, of course, in a society where drugs is a problem, we deal a lot with that, just on terms of handling that socially. We deal with the vast devastation that has occurred in education in America.
Should drugs be legalized, Reverend?
I don't know. You know, I don't think, here's my problem with it. You know, when somebody drives down the street and he's on a drug and he crashes into your car and does a head-on collision and he gets out and says, well, I'm sorry I killed your family and so forth, but, you know, I have a right to take my drugs. I don't think you can put people in into vehicles and, you know, flying airplanes and driving cars and trains and everything else who are on drugs.
All right, well, for the purpose of this discussion, I'm going to have to take a position that I don't necessarily believe in, but why wouldn't we treat drugs legalized as we treat alcohol? In other words... alcohol is out there, and it's a big problem, but you can't drive legally under the influence of alcohol. Why wouldn't legalized drugs be roughly the same?
Well, because, you know, that's the big promotional push by the psychiatrists who love to put people on drugs, saying, oh, yeah, hey, listen, it's great, you know, and they call them recreation drugs out here.
That's right.
I think that's insane. I think that the problem is that look at how many thousands of deaths are created by alcoholism in America. And for them to say, well, let's just give people drugs now and go full blast with that, what they're saying is, so let's kill a few thousand more. What the heck? You know, it works with alcohol.
Well, the main...
We'll just add another piece to that devastation.
Right, but the main argument appears to be our jails are full. We now have just short of 1 million people in jail in America. About 60% of them are in there on drug-related offenses. America, Reverend, is falling apart.
It's a very good point you bring up, Art. There are 750,000 prisoners in America. By the way, the highest per capita of any place in the world. We put more people in prison than anyone else.
Actually, Reverend, the late figures are over 900,000. That's as of tonight.
Wow. Well, okay, I'm probably 2 years behind you, which is a horrendous point. Let me bring out a couple of points on that. In California, it's 44% of the people who go to prison are being put in there for drug and drug-related crimes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you have to criminalize it that way. I think what you have to do is offer workable programs that show that you can take somebody off of drugs and stay off of drugs. And I think that that starts to change the society. I mean, we've taken 100,000 people or more off of drugs now. We have a recidivism rate that's one of the lowest that I know of in the world by independent studies in Sweden and in Spain, for example. We're talking about 75 and 78% success rates. That's quite something. We're 100% drug-free religion. That means it is possible to be drug-free. I think for people to say, let's just go back and give drugs to people and let them take it is devastation. I think that's what destroys a culture. And if you look at all the historical perspectives, cultures that went into heavy drugs did not survive. So, but I'm saying with 100% drug-free religion, I think that others can do it. And I grew up out in Utah originally, so I saw, you know, I saw the Mormons, and they lived lives where, again, they chose not to use drugs, and they've been a very strong and a very healthy kind of church out that way.
Reverend, we're going to have to hold it there. We're getting close to the top of the hour, and I've got something I've got to do. So I'm going to ask you to hold on. When we come back, we'll also touch on the new syndrome, the Gulf War syndrome. So relax, we'll be back to you shortly. The Reverend Heber Gentsch is my guest. He's president of the Church of Scientology. And I promise we'll get phone lines open in the next hour. The one, the pet project that I know you have, and it was the only thing I knew about you before this interview, was with regard to government openness, the radiation tests the government has done, the above ground testing they did that I think may have affected you. You said you lived in Utah, and the testing our government is doing generally, chemical, biological, and so forth.
Yeah, there's a much larger picture which you bring up here, and it's an important picture, especially. Las Vegas, Nevada, or anyone in the States, because everyone in the States was hit by atomic fallout. Now, there's two points I want to bring up. I mean, I grew up in Utah, and so I was a recipient of radiation fallout. When I was 15 years of age, I almost died of radiation burns, which the government chose not to tell the people out there.
Correct.
That they were recipients of heavy fallout. And for them to say now that, well, we just didn't know what it was doing, we were trying to find out, is absolutely insane. You know, I have to characterize it almost humorously, but it's just insane because reading documents from 1946, top secret, they knew what they were doing. They knew that it would create problems. They knew that, I mean, I was trained in the Army in handling nuclear casualties. So I know the extent of what it can do to an individual.
Yes, I was given similar training in the Air Force. I was a medic, so I know what you went through.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, this is something which I think people have to look at. So I saw, you know, I saw an incredible amount of devastation out there. I saw lives being just destroyed. And I have lost a lot of friends in Utah who died, unfortunately, at a very young age. And again, we weren't told what they were doing. We didn't know the level of destruction that was occurring at the time. Along with that, at the same time, people don't realize that there was also this problem, which was that the government was also involved in biological weapons, chemical weapons, and experimenting vastly on the American public, where a lot of people died.
Yes. Did you see the recent theatrical version? You probably missed it, of The Stand.
I don't think I saw
Stephen King's The Stand. Well, the scenario in The Stand is that some sort of biological something awful gets loose and virtually kills about 99% of the world's population. And that the story went on from there. It's not important. The question is, what do you think AIDS is?
Well, you know, I get that question, Art, all along. Let me just say, you know, that is such a devastating question, and it's such a devastating disease. But it seems to be so sophisticated that one has to wonder about it. Let me just say that when we were doing a bunch of work on the issue of biological weapons, a lady came to me about 1978, maybe as late as 79, but right around there, 78 and 79. And we had been publishing some stuff at that time. She walked in and she said that her husband had been a person working at Edgewood, Maryland, where a lot of this stuff went on. And she said that he died of his entire immune deficiency system breaking down, that he had worked on so many different biological weapons and taken so many different types of antidotes for it that his body had just completely deteriorated and had no longer any defense systems.
That's AIDS.
That's AIDS to me. And I heard that back in, before I'd ever heard of AIDS, by the way. And she was trying to get the government to give her restitution for his death, and they just said it was job-related. Yeah, well, that's interesting. I never saw that lady again, but it has always stuck in my mind. Where did it come from? And that one little anecdote, that one remembrance, has bothered me. On top of that, when I have seen the CIA in the 50s developing special biological weapons which would kill ethnic minorities, as they did with black children using a whooping cough virus in the 50s down in Palmetto, Florida. We went through 10,000 documents the CIA gave us under the Freedom of Information Act and slowly, meticulously pieced together a mosaic of horror where the CIA had run this operation and killed, 12 kids died, 11 were black, 400 came down with it. It was a really major epidemic. But it was engineered by CIA agents going down there to see if they could develop biological weapons which would attack certain groups and certain minorities. Now, we both know that if you allow that to happen, that a lot of destruction can occur. And also, if allowing that to happen, then the fact that it occurred that long ago in the 50s, they have continued to develop weapons of magnitude. Where are they now? And the question does have to be asked, and I think that, again, under the Freedom of Information Act, as folks want to know, is AIDS a biologic that got loose?
That's right.
And if it is, then you could imagine the government not wanting anyone to know what that is.
Well, of course, it sounds like you lean toward that view.
Well, I'm terribly worried about it because I don't have an exact document on it. But you know, when I see these documents of disease after disease and targeting ethnic minorities in America for decimation and developing the weapons and spending, who knows, hundreds of millions of dollars to do it. It bothers me. I have a letter here from January 1, 1990 from Channel 9 KUSA up in Denver to a couple of our folks, and he writes at the end of this something which really disturbs me. This is 1990, by the way. In case you're interested in the current Defense Department research in this field, this is chemical biological warfare, I'm enclosing an extra copy of the Environmental Impact Statement for the Army Biological Defense Program. The Army is spending more than $100 million a year to experiment with and even to genetically alter some of the most dangerous pathogens known, everything from encephalitis to snake toxin. And he goes on, one has to know, in other words, I am deeply grateful to what Helen O'Leary has done at the Department of Energy level to expose the past issues of radiation and what had occurred in the experimentation, much of which still has to be released and has not been released. What I am terrified about is that deeply concerned about is the chemical and biologics that also were being released in those years, and the attention has not yet gone on to really releasing the information on that level. That has to happen.
What happened in San Francisco? There was a big, some sort of test, I recall, in San Francisco.
Yeah, what they did in San Francisco, and they did it in some other places, was they took some pathogenic type of germs, and they said it's just harmless, it's not going to harm anybody, and they took ships off the coast there, and they ran a fog of these germs and released them in the wind so that they drifted over through the bay. And then throughout the San Francisco area, they had these little receptor points that they had placed, not telling the people what they're doing, by the way, where they could pick up the germs and they could figure out how fast they traveled, at what intensities, and so forth.
Mm.
It was found out later that those pathogens that they released caused people with emphysema and people who had respiratory problems. They documented a death in that particular case. We don't know how many other people died with it. But that was an experiment done in San Francisco. Then you go to the other coast, and there in Georgia, for example, they were releasing hundreds of millions of mosquitoes, and they selected an area where it was a black or African American housing area, which hit these folks. And then when we exposed that information, went back, and folks wrote in and told us about a number of diseases that had happened, stillborn babies which had occurred because of that. It just went on and on and on. Well, the point simply being that it was in Savannah, for example. You know, these people were talking about mysterious diseases, deaths from unknown causes in the neighborhood and so on, and unknown diseases. Infants died. 24 years later, people are having heart trouble caused by mosquito-induced problems. They didn't tell these people what they were doing. They didn't tell them they were releasing it. Again, here's the government experimenting on the public. It's macabre.
And I take it that Scientology is able to address a lot of the ills that have been perpetrated in those ways.
Well, we've run into it, especially, I think, in terms of what happened in Vietnam, Agent Orange, for example, with dioxin. Now they use it in Malathion out here in California and spray everybody with that. And again, what we find is respiratory effects. My son almost died because they were spraying with Malathion out here a few years ago, and I went over here to Presbyterian Hospital, a children's hospital, and talked to one of the doctors there, and he said they always had a rise in respiratory problems with children or with people of the aged whenever that stuff was sprayed, but they just go ahead and do it. We found, yes, we started addressing the problem with dioxin, for example, and the Agent Orange.
We're going to pause here at the top of the hour for some news, and we'll be right back with the Reverend Jitch. This is Coast to Coast AM.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up.
Won't you take me back to school? I need to learn the golden rule. Won't you lay it on the line?
Premier Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 1st of June, 1994.
Good evening, good morning. Actually, good morning, I think, over most of the coverage area of the network, with the exception of Alaska and Hawaii, where it's going to be evening for a while yet. I've got a guest. My guest is the Reverend Heber Jitch. Reverend Jitch is the president of the Church of Scientology. And for the past hour, we've been talking about Scientology and much more. And we're going to do more of that in just a moment. We'll get back to the Reverend Jitch in just a moment. Now, once again, the Reverend Jitch. Are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, I am, Art. I remember you were just closing off with your concern about potential biologics in the...
well, the Gulf War.
Storm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have in front of me, just interesting, three documents from the CIA, top secret classification.
Oh.
Let me just read you two or three of these little paragraphs, because it sort of leads to what you were just talking about at the break. Here's one that's dated 9 November 1962. It's date initiated MKUltra 1958. It says, cutouts for drugs and other materials, and then development and testing of anti-material systems, biological hydrogen systems, personnel marking systems, and biological weapon harassment systems, provides facility for large-scale production of microorganisms, provides general advisory and developmental services in the biological weapon area. In that same project, subproject 78, dated 28 September 57, it says, purpose, to provide complete microbiological support, ranging from research establishing production capabilities to meet Technical Services Division's special requirements, to provide special materials as well as general advisory and system developmental service in connection with the overall microbiological and biological program, provides cover and access cutout for special jobs. And here's the paragraph. This last one is marked warning, notice, defense intelligence source and methods involved, eyes only, top secret. It says A, and it's all blanked out. You know, people who are not familiar with it, they black out a lot of sections. Develops, evaluates, and maintains a variety of biological materials suitable for covert application. Since some of these materials have nothing to do with the area of manipulating human behavior, we are planning to continue our relationship with blank using our normal contractual mechanism.
Mm.
All I'm saying is that these documents, which are startling and devastating in their intent and in some of the description, show that there has been a foundation for this type of activity for some time. The closest present time concern is the attempt to create biological weapons or to genetically alter various types of germs and so forth for germ warfare. With the whole concept, for example, the National Institute of Mental Health, headed up by psychiatrist Frederick Goodwin, who has been promoting the idea of genetically altering African Americans as, quote, his solution to, quote, crime.
Huh.
And that takes us into a whole kind of Clockwork Orange, modern madness sort of thing that I think we really have to pay attention to, have to look at. I don't want to make everyone afraid on all this. I just say that an informed public is a public that can take action on these sort of things. And so I think what we're saying is, here's the information. Other people should hop on the line, use the Freedom of Information Act, dig out this type of thing, and do something about, you know, what is happening in that area.
Interesting. You should mention Clockwork Orange. We almost have a Clockwork Orange in some parts of the country right now in our inner cities. And one has to wonder, Reverend, where do you think it's going? Are we headed towards some form of anarchy or rebellion?
Well, I think unless we do something about the drug problems and about the moral problems in this country, which is really going to have to be borne by the churches, because government is paying billions of dollars just to keep people on drugs or give them new drugs to replace the old drugs. Unless we address that problem and start getting people off of it, we are going to have some problems. And but you know, we've been down there in Compton since the riots, for example. We've taken 1,000 people through a study technology program implemented by or created by Mr. Hubbard to deal with educational problems. We've gotten kids out of gangs. We've gotten people off the streets who were homeless, who are now working. We've been able to change people's grade levels, 2 and 3 levels, with 25 hours of address. I say that those types of things, those types of capabilities, have to be spelled out in other cities. This was just done by churches and contributions by corporations and so forth. It wasn't done by the state, wasn't done by the city. This is just a bunch of ministers and some Scientology ministers of different faiths getting together, using the technology of how to study and dealing with the issues, and also dealing with drugs. There are solutions, but they have to be implemented. And if not, yes, you're going to have a deterioration.
All right. Well, sounds good. Why do people write books like L. Ron Hubbard, Messiah or Madman?
Well, I think because you have people who have had certain animosities. You're always going to have somebody who is not going to agree with our stance on drugs, people who are not going to agree with the fact that we expose this type of thing that we've discussed over the last hour. I think that there's always going to be critics who come out with an attack on that, as has occurred, you know, since day one. We have very assiduously gone in and examined and found a lot of psychiatrists involved in the assault of the American people. They find no problem with being involved in mind control experiments, giving people drugs against their will.
All right, here's one more hardball question, then I want to get the lines open.
Sure.
This comes in a fax from Rick in Denver, who asks, ask about the money. These people, he says, are worth billions. Are you worth billions, Reverend?
No, but I always no, we're not. But I would say that Scientology is priceless. And if Scientology is worth money, yes, we have, as an organization, we've grown tremendously, but people contribute to Scientology. We're not dependent on government. We all pay our taxes like anybody else and any other church. And, in fact, our people tend to become more affluent once they join Scientology, and therefore they contribute more to the tax base. Also, Scientology offers a lot of free services, and this was, again, assiduously examined by the Internal Revenue Service, and the fellow in Denver just isn't up to speed on where we are.
So you don't apologize for affluence?
I don't apologize for affluence, because what we've done is we've done so much to move into the communities, assist the communities. We've done a tremendous amount to deal with handling drugs. It's interesting, I talked to a guy who was a cocaine addict here in Los Angeles. He said, well, look, when I was an addict, he said, I did an average of 5 petty crimes a day just to support the habit, you know, steal a radio from a car, break into somebody's home, take something, and so forth.
Yes.
And he said, you know, that's the average that I could see for addicts. Well, right or wrong, let's just say we take 1,000 people off of drugs, and we've taken hardened addicts off of drugs. That's 5,000 crimes a day. That's 35,000 crimes a week.
Sure is.
Or it's, you know, it runs close to, you know, 1 million crimes in a year, whatever. The point simply being that there is a way to turn this thing around, and we can do something about it. So, no, Scientology uses its capabilities to help other people. And by the way, can I give a number if they want more information?
Of course.
It's a 1-800-334-5433. I'll give it again. It's a 1-800 number, 334-5433. If they want more information about Scientology or Dianetics, they can call those numbers.
All right.
Fine.
What I would like to do now is open my telephone lines. They are all ringing for you, so let's find out what is on everybody's mind out there.
Okay.
Tighten your seatbelt. You never know.
Okay.
All right. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Reverend Jench. Hello.
Yes, I'd like to ask the Reverend here a few questions.
All right. Go ahead.
Considering afterlife, as you say, when you die, that you'll be brought back, how does that seem to work? There, you don't actually believe in actual heaven or hell, or they'll just be brought back to Earth or something?
Well, you're already on Earth. I don't think you're going to go away. I think you just sort of come back here. I think that the heaven and hell depends upon how the individual, lives his life. Again, I think it's largely up to the individual. I think that there is evil, but I think the evil is largely in the reactive mind. And here's a datum that is interesting, and that is that we hold that man is basically good. He may act badly, but he's basically good. So I know this sort of takes me away from some of the Western tradition, which says that, you know, man has a lot of evil in him, or he is evil. In fact, I had somebody in Germany say that, well, you can't be religion unless you believe man is completely evil. Well, I don't know what religion that is, but I tell you what, I think a man is basically good. He acts badly at times, but he is basically good, and that is another concept. You come back, I think it's each individual has his own understanding of what his life is like or what his life might have been like before. But that whole concept is certainly not new to this world. It is, of course, something old and established in the Eastern traditions, but not so popular or well-known in the Western tradition.
All right, caller.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for the call.
You.
And let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with Reverend Jench. Hello. Where are you calling from, please?
To KNZR.
KNZR. Are you on a cellular? Well, we lost him. I think that was a cellular caller. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Reverend Jench. Where are you calling from, please?
Phoenix,
KFYI. Yes, sir.
Yes, I'd like to know the opinion on faith healing.
Faith healing, that's a good question.
Well, you know, I I've seen faith healing work tremendously. I've seen people do it. It is something which exists in the society, and it's something which should not be put down. Religions do it. I've experienced and watched that sort of thing in Utah when I grew up.
Are there power? Are there people, Reverend, with the power to heal with their hands or with some power that comes from within?
I've seen it happen. The difference with Scientology being that we help the individual to help himself, so that it isn't just put in the control of another individual. But yes, I've seen people do healing. Tremendous things happen. I saw it as a kid out there in Utah. They believe on the laying on of hands, that sort of thing. I think, again, the difference being that with Scientology, you have an exact technology which helps on the psychosomatic side to help the individual become more able, more well, more healthy. But definitely laying on of hands and faith healing is something which has existed in the society for centuries, and it's a phenomenon which is real and does occur.
All right. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Reverend Gentz. Hello.
Yes, Reverend KNUS Denver.
Hi.
Reverend, about 15 years ago or so I lived in San Francisco, and someone was trying to encourage me to go to a seminar training, SDST,
mm-hmm.
which I refused to do. I kind of felt very much that this was not entirely ethical or helpful. And at that time, I was told by this particular member of EST that EST was an adversary, an opponent of Scientology, and I'd like you, if you would, to explain that.
All thank right, you. Thank you. EST out of the 60s.
Good question. I had the opportunity to do a show with Larry King Live last December, and that question was raised by Harry Rosenberg, as a matter of fact, who was the brother of Van Erhardt. Erhardt admits years ago that he had stolen a good deal of Scientology from its early days, and that it was what he used in some form or another to build his empire. And he admits that it was something that gave him a great deal of understanding about the mind and so forth. And then he went on to create what became EST, and with some sort of other things thrown in. My point simply being that any animosity which Mr. Erhardt has, and he certainly has expressed it, as he did on the show, against myself and the church in December, is based on the fact that he has some law enforcement problems, and he does have some problems with having not told his people truthfully where he got this information that has been somewhat successful. But it's a very, very small part that he had of Scientology. It certainly was not anywhere near what Scientology really is. And, of course, people who want real Scientology come to the churches, not to EST. And finally, the point that he brought up was that somehow he was having problems coming back into America, and as I indicated to his brother when I spoke with him, he has some outstanding money that he owes to the Internal Revenue Service, certainly the 60 Minutes show, and I've seen other affidavits and documents showing that his sexual assaults on his own children were rather extensive, and I would imagine still punishable by law. So that's Mr. Erhardt's problem. It's unfortunate that he lived that kind of a life, but last time I heard he was in Moscow, and I don't know where he is now in present time, but Scientology is Scientology, and it is something which works 100% when it's applied properly, and that's why it is a technology. Altering it makes it less effective, and then it's not Scientology.
All right. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Reverend Gentz, or you would have been on the wild card line. You are on the air with Reverend Gentz. Where are you calling from, please?
San Diego, all right.
San Diego, all right.
Yes, Reverend, really, it seems like quite an attack on this gentleman from S that I have no particular attachment or feelings. It just seems like a great ad hominem attack. But my question is this. You seem to follow great causes, a sort of an all-around church. You rally on causes that most people could get attached to. the anti-AMA kind of a thing and the government chemical kind of a thing. Would you discuss any affiliation, present or past, and how you may have been affiliated or worked with Reverend Sung Myung Moon's Unification Church, known as the Moonies, and any charges of fraud that were charged against you for mind manipulation of people? Thank you. I'll take the answer.
All right. All right. Thank you. Affiliations with Sung
Reverend Moon?
Yes.
I met Reverend Moon. I think that, you know, he is a person who has his concept of religion, and in America he has a right to express that religion. I know some of his people. The issues that I've worked with Reverend Moon on have been, or his people, have been the concerns for human rights issues, people who've been kidnapped and held against their will and so forth. And in fact, the head of the Criminal Association Network's security system is now doing 7 years for kidnapping somebody in Washington, D.C., and his associate is standing trial in the next 4 or 5 days for that type of thing. Look, I think that, again, in America, you have a right to believe as you want to believe. The Unification Church has a right to believe as it wants to believe. People have a right to join that. Now, in terms of this mind manipulation stuff, well, that whole issue has been invalidated judicially in the courts extensively. In fact, the American Psychological Association and the American Sociological Association have come down and condemned the main proponents of that theory as being unscientific, and as I say, three court decisions have also indicated that there isn't anything to that. If you're going to talk about mind manipulation being people who believe in something or they follow a particular leader or something like that, Scientology itself believes that you make up your own mind. You can read a book and you can make up your own mind as to whether or not it's something you want to be involved in or not be involved in. And if you're in Scientology and you've studied it, you apply it, and you can make up your own mind as to whether it's workable or it's not workable.
All right, Reverend Gents, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back to you.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
My guest is the president of the Church of Scientology, Hebert Gentsch. He's in the Los Angeles area, and he's up for your question. So if you have one, pick up a telephone and join us. Reverend, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to jump right back into the telephone lines, if that's all right with you.
Sure, let's go.
Let's see what's out there. Hi, on the wildcard line, you're on the air with Reverend Gentsch.
Yeah, my question is...
All right, you're hard to hear, sir. Get close to the phone and speak up.
Oh, my question is, does he believe in the fear of God, and does they pray? Who do they pray to, and why do they pray?
All right, thank you. Do you believe in the fear of God, Reverend?
Well, he's asking me a personal question on that. I don't think one has to fear God. I think that... if one is living a life of service and assistance to mankind, I don't think there is a fear. And, again, that's my own personal feeling. By the way, that's my hometown. That's where I was born, was in Salt Lake City, Utah. And, no, I think that, again, we leave it up to the individual what he thinks about God. We don't have a dogma on it. It's up to the person to make his own discovery, his own feeling about it. Again, as I say, since we have people of all religions, we do believe in the supreme being. My personal feeling is, if you're living a good life and you're helping people and you're definitely positive in what you're doing and helping others, I don't think you have to have a fear.
All right. On the wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Talking about cancer or AIDS and biological warfare and
that's correct, yes,
and things of that nature. I was wondering, had he done any research into possible solutions for those type of problems?
All right.
I really haven't personally, Art, though I know that, you know, folks are sending me stuff all the time, and I can't, you know, I can't vouch for it because I haven't, you know, I don't have somebody who has really sat down and worked it out. I know that there are people out there talking about therapies for it. I know they're talking about oxygenation and hydrogenation therapies and stuff like that.
What about Dianetic principles? Would they affect something like AIDS?
You know, the point is Dianetics works on the mind and the issue of the mind, but if a person is ill and he has a physical illness, he goes to a doctor to deal with that. We deal with Dianetics deals with the psychosomatic illnesses, and a person who is physically ill would have to see a doctor and be
What percentages, Reverend, of the illnesses that are out there do you would you guess are psychosomatic?
Well, I've seen literature saying that about 60% to 65% of the illnesses out there are psychosomatic. So that's quite an area, you see, and that probably explains your placebo effect.
It certainly does. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Reverend Gench. Hello, where are you calling from, please?
Hey, this is Sean from San Diego.
Hello, Sean.
I told you about the Doomsday Conspiracy book. Well, hey, Reverend.
Yeah.
You guys are crooks.
What's that?
You guys are crooks. You take money from people, and you take all these people's livelihood. I have a friend that was in it. He lost everything. He lost his business because you guys asked for money, all this money, and I don't see how you guys can call yourself a religion. You don't believe in a real God. You believe in psychosis.
What's your religion?
I'm non-denominational. But I believe that Jesus, you know, there's a Jesus, that he died on the cross, and that he's going to come back.
Well, God bless you, and I'll tell you that, you know, in America, a person has a right to believe what he wants to believe, and I defend to the death your right to have your religion and what you believe.
I believe that you guys can believe what you want, but why take everybody's money? Why not preach it, but then let them have what they have?
Well, let me just say this. I mean, first of all, there are 8 million members, and we've done some studies, which is information shows on what is Scientology, that people tend to make more money in Scientology. You giving me an unnamed person, an unnamed case, I'm not sure what that situation is about or whether it exists or not, but people do become more capable in Scientology, and they tend to earn more money. The other thing is, I think it's kind of like Tom Snyder once said to me. He said, you know, it's interesting, he said, the people who complain about contributions to Scientology are generally not in Scientology.
It is true. It is true. It really is true.
Yeah.
There is a lot of controversy, Reverend, about the financial dealings of Scientology and what it requires of its members. And what does it require?
Well, it requires that an individual, you know, he can study Scientology. He can certainly come in and he can, there are services which are. They don't cost anything. There are fixed donations for certain studies and for counseling in Scientology. And as I say, the IRS looked at that very, very strongly, very clearly, with the most extensive examination of it. And by the way, found out that other churches do the same thing. They have fixed donations. The Mormon Church does. The Catholic Church does. The Jewish synagogues do, and so forth. And so it's not unusual. We do comport with the same type of situation others do, but I think the thing about Scientology is read it, study it, make up your own mind. It isn't even what I say what it is. I found it extremely helpful, but again, make up your own mind is the main maxim. I mean, Mr. Hubbard said, what's true for you is true for you, and be willing to observe what you observe. So it's on your own self-determinism, your own choice. You take a look at it. Make up your own mind. And yes, Scientology does cost. We have to pay for lights and for gasoline and for rent like anybody else, and people contribute to the church along that line, and other churches survive the same way.
But you don't force anybody to. That's the key.
No, it's up to the individual.
All right.
Wants to do it, it's up to him.
On the wild card line, you're on the air with Reverend Gench. Hello, where are you calling from, please?
KVI Country, this is Clint.
All right, up in Seattle,
Reverend,
yes.
Reverend, I have a question for you, and it's about regarding your founder, L. Ron Hubbard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember reading an interview with L. Sprague de Camp and Lynn Carter saying that L. Ron Hubbard had a bet that he could start a religion, and sure enough, he started Scientology.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because that case is a case that, you know, it's interesting. People who have said some negative things about Scientology over the years have sort of said that that was the situation. It's interesting. The guy who said that was not L. Ron Hubbard, but it was a science fiction writer. And
which is L. Ron Hubbard.
No, no, not him. It was at a...
either L. Sprague Orson, Camp or
It was a fellow who was one of his contemporaries who was doing that sort of thing at a party in 1939. And we have the affidavits from that, which was presented in a court in Germany that made the same assertion. And the people who made that assertion, by the way, lost it in court and had to pay the church that money because
okay,
it was proven that Mr. Hubbard never did say that.
Why do you have
the
account between Lynn Carter and L. Sprague de Camp that verified it? L. Ron Hubbard had actually said that they made a bet, all three of them.
Well, I tell you, I've seen the affidavits on this thing by the people who were at that party, and that is not what occurred. And Mr. Hubbard, by the way, this religion is something which has helped millions and millions of people. And the other thing is, when Mr. Hubbard passed away, he gave all the money to the church, his entire estate. So anyone who makes that sort of charge is someone who must
well, see,
have another agenda. But I'll tell you,
it's
been disproven already in the courts.
By them. You know, it was not any charges. It was just stating the fact that Lynn Carter and L. Sprague de Camp said that they had sat down over, you know, a couple pints or whatever, and they were discussing religion and everything else and, you know, science fiction writing, and that they had... L. Ron Hubbard had spoke up and said, you know, I bet you I can start a religion.
All right.
No, that's an absolute lie, as you know, and I have the documentation on it, and I'd be very happy. Art, I'll send it to you, because obviously this fellow's not going to let go of his assertions. And by the way, if you have such a thing signed as an affidavit from L. Sprague de Camp, I'd like to see it, because I have not seen such a document, but I have seen other affidavits of people who were at that particular party. And Mr. Hubbard was not the person who originated that. It was somebody else.
And we shall return. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Reverend Gents. Hello.
Hi, good morning, Art. This is Denise in Wichita.
Hi, Denise.
Hi. First of all, Art, I'd like to ask you, are you an adherent to Scientology?
No, I am not.
Okay. And then I have two questions for the Reverend. Number one is, who does he say that Jesus Christ is historically?
All right.
Well, Jesus Christ, we believe he is the Son of God, and that we believe that he had a... threefold plan for man, which is in the Bible, and that is that man should seek for health, for happiness, and for immortality, and we agree with those goals as well.
Okay, and the second question I had then, if do you point to him as one of the ascended masters or one of the prophets or great teachers?
It's interesting. When you say ascended masters and prophets and great teachers, you just covered three other religions.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I kind of did.
But that was good.
Well, I just wondered what you do with the statement that Jesus made, that he is the way and that no man comes to God but by him, and how you get around so many of the different, I mean, dogmatic teachings of the Bible if you don't kneel to Jesus Christ as Lord, such as, I mean, I heard you speak of homosexuality, and so it's, my view isn't politically correct, it's biblically correct, and how do you deal with that?
All right, thank you.
Well, I there's five questions there, but let me just say that, again, we leave it up to the individual what he believes in terms of the Supreme Being, and he makes his own choice. And, again, morality is something which... is up to the individual. It's not something which you can legislate. It's something which an individual has to place upon himself. And certainly society can say, well, here, there are certain morals. Here's the strange thing. In California, here in Los Angeles, the school board has ruled that a kid can bring a gun to school only three times. But bring a Bible and you're out.
That's
and I
true.
Think that, I mean, this is insane. I think that it's time for some morality to go back into schools. We've turned it over to the psychiatrists. They're a disaster. And I think the fact that it's time for people to have some morals, but again, you can't enforce it. And Mr. Hubbard wrote, by the way, a non-religious moral code, which has basic principles of morals. And by the way, that's had millions of copies of that around the world, translated in a lot of different languages. It's really become, I think, one of the most popular works of his writings.
All right, Reverend, let's keep moving. Not a lot of time, but a lot of calls.
Okay.
On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Reverend Gentsch. Where are you calling from, please? Hello there. Going once, going twice, three times gone. And on the first-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, that's Ken calling from San Diego.
Hi, Ken.
I had a question for the Reverend. I was wondering if he was familiar with a book that came on the scene right around the same time as Dianetics. It's a work called The Urantia Book.
Oh, yes, Urantia. All right, Urantia, Reverend.
Urantia. No, I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, really?
I've heard that name, but I couldn't tell you that I know that much about it. I just know that Dianetics, when it came out in 1950, went onto the bestseller lists, and it was there for, I think, about 26, 28 weeks, and has hit the bestseller lists a number of times since 1950. And as a matter of fact, there are now 400 new Dianetics groups in America. Started a whole new thing, started since January of this year. Is that book, Urantia, still a current bestseller type or what?
No, it is not. Caller's off the line now. Reverend, can a person get the benefits of Scientology by reading Dianetics without necessarily going through the formal regimen in the church?
Sure. I meet people all over the world who have been using Dianetics for years and years and use it in their lives. They've never stepped inside of a church. Sure, a person can pick up Dianetics, learn how to do it, and they can apply it to themselves and to others, and they may never walk into a church. That's quite possible, since, as I say, there are about 17 million copies of Dianetics out there, and that's just individual copies. It doesn't take into consideration the number of times a book would pass through the hands of different people. I think, I figure a book has about a six-person, it goes through about six persons' hands in a lifetime of a book.
Mm-hmm. I will say this, Scientology has a very tenacious mailing department, because I had a very good friend who was a Scientologist, and he did me the perhaps dubious favor of putting me on a list, and I think that I received probably $150 or $200 worth of literature over the over several years from Scientology. They were doggedly just about every week, two or three times, I would receive something.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because I had heard about Scientology back in 1960 when I was in the service in Fort Meade, Maryland, out near Washington, D.C. And I had started reading a little bit about it at that time, and I said, well, look, can you put me on a mailing list? So they put me on a mailing list, and but while I was really interested in it over the years, and I would, every time I moved, I would write to the church out there and say, I've moved, please send forward this information. And they did it for several years, and as a result of that, I came into Scientology after I'd looked at so many other things. So I'm one of the guys who's really happy that they kept me on a mailing list.
I see. Well, I think they finally lost me when I moved someplace.
I see.
On the wild card line, you're on the air with the Reverend Gentsch. Hello.
Yes, Reverend?
Yes.
Wichita, Kansas here.
Hi.
Question for you. There's been movements, in the past 100 years, Theosophical Society, different groups that have put together Eastern religions with either Western science or what have you, and there's tons of interpretations, like the gentleman called about the Urantia book and what have you. But the traditional religions like Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity have all had traditions that have led people to be what you would call realized or saints or whatever. Will Scientology produce people of that stature whose writings will endure for thousands or hundreds of years, does it lead to a realization, or is it just more of a social and comfort fitting into Western society? And also, do you believe in evolution, or do you believe man was primordially perfect or do you believe he's evolving?
All right.
Well,
thanks.
You gave me a bunch of questions here. Let me just say that, and listen, those are good questions, especially, you know, of the enlightenment point. In Scientology, we believe that man can be enlightened. We talk about a state of being, which we call clear, where an individual no longer has that reactive mind that we're talking about. That would be equivalent to what Gautama Buddha was talking about, the state of Bodhi, where one is aware of himself as a spiritual being. He's aware of his environment. He has a great deal more health. He has a great deal more intention. He has a greater ability to achieve his goals and so forth. And again, he realizes his spiritual nature. So, yes, in Scientology, that concept of clear, and in Dianetics is the first time that concept came up, is definitely a part of it. In terms of concept of evolution, no, I don't know that, you know, evolution is such a thing. There isn't really, I gotta say, scientific evidence to show it, because all those little missing links and the number of mathematical capabilities to have such a thing happen, I think is pretty far out. The other thing I always find interesting is where the scientists say that you know, a bunch of molecules got together and said, hey, listen, what do you think, Harry? Let's just become some genetic material and we'll grow into something.
Yes.
Well, I don't buy that. I think the fact that you just, where did the molecules come from and when did they decide to become genetically whatever? No, there seems to be an interesting plan about life, and I just don't believe it's evolution. I don't believe in Darwin, and I know that probably makes some folks unhappy out there, but no, I believe that you can understand what life is all about through Scientology, but you can make up your own mind about it. It is a religion. It does address you as a spiritual being. And again, that number is 1-800-334-5433. People want to know about it. There have been a number of other religions in the past. Buddhism has now survived over 2,000 years. I think that Scientology will definitely go forward, and that it will be here very much 2,000 years from now, and we will work to see that it is as pure and untainted and unchanged in its technical capabilities as it is today.
All right. Well, you're about the Jerry Brown of talk radio here. Do you want to get that 800 number in one more time?
Sure. 1-800-334-5433, and I'm not the moon child.
All right. Well, it has been a pleasure interviewing you, and I would like to have you back again sometime. We were able to touch on just about every subject, so would you come back again?
Sure, I'd love to, Art. And listen, thanks to all your listeners out there. There's some good questions, and I really enjoyed this, and I think that you have a great show. And I think there's obviously a lot of folks up at this hour all across America.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, in the middle of the night. Reverend
Gents. Nobody trying to go to sleep tonight.
Reverend Gents, thank you.
My pleasure.
Take care, sir. The Reverend Gents, who is the president of the Church of Scientology.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 1st of June, 1994.
Good morning, everybody. If you missed the last 2 hours, you missed a very good interview with the Reverend Gents, Heber Gents, who is the president of the Church of Scientology. Very controversial, but a very good interview. Wide-ranging, and was very enjoyable to do, and we will have him back. Now, on to the news of the day, North Korea. And I'm going to try and lay all this out fairly quickly. North Korea has now, according to CNN, issued a threat to withdraw from the Global Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty if the UN continues to demand full access to its nuclear program. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh, but in other words, they're saying we're not going to be part of the treaty if you require us to adhere to it. The U.S. plans to ask for sanctions, what we apparently are going to call incremental sanctions, what the North Koreans call an act of war. And so I will simply ask you this morning, where do you think the North Korean situation is headed, and when do you think it will get there? President Clinton is now in Rome, first stop in a European tour commemorating D-Day 50 years ago. Omaha Beach. He will meet later today with Pope John Paul II. Vatican officials say he will likely confront the president on the subject of abortion. And my only question here is, how would you imagine that conversation might go? The Pope confronting Bill Clinton on abortion. What do you think Bill Clinton would say to the Pope? Pope might say, Mr. President, do you realize what a sinful thing you're doing? Do you realize that you're responsible for the murder of millions of souls? And I just wonder how you think Bill Clinton might respond to that. Body bag journalism is what they're calling it in Miami. In Miami, where there's lots of violence and not so many tourists these days, Miami hotels, and as a matter of fact, a chain of seven and many more, have now decided to block local newscasts that show violence in that city because it's scaring away the tourists. Now, there is one station in Miami now showing what's called family-sensitive news. And my question for you is, would you like your local station to adopt family-sensitive news, and or would you like your cable company or your hotel, if you're in a hotel, to block a newscast that would show all of this violence? Recalling Senator Bradley's remark, if you think violence among the young is bad now, just wait till you see what's coming. Paula Jones. Sounds like it ought to be a song, doesn't it? Well, Paula Jones has decided to go on the talk show circuit. TV talk shows. Maybe we could get Paula Jones on this program. Would you like that? To tell her story, she says she's going to go out now to all the talk shows and tell her story. She, of course, is the former Arkansas State employee charging Bill Clinton with sexual harassment. Think he did it? Do you even care? That's big news, you know. All the surveys are showing. Survey shows the American people don't care about Paula Jones or Jennifer Flowers or, who knows, legions of others. Now two men, mind you, have filed a federal court lawsuit in Tampa, Florida, happened yesterday, charging Ms. Jones her lawsuit, that is, interferes with Bill Clinton's contract to serve the American people. The suit seeks $27 million in punitive damages from Jones. So she better get on TV. She better, had better get out there quickly and raise as much money as she can. For if that kind of a judgment went against her, she would owe... That's $27 million. Well, Jamaica is going to act as host to us, the U.S., in order to review the claims of Haitian refugees. And so that will be the staging area, Jamaica. We will pay for the program as the Haitians continue to build their boats and get ready to go. Or is it getting ready to come? Rodney King, a federal jury in L.A., decided that Rodney King should not receive punitive damages from six Los Angeles police officers involved in his beating. It was a unanimous verdict, and yet CNN caught one of the jurors coming out, and the juror was angry, said the verdict was racially motivated, and there was no, quote, no justice here, end quote. So you've got to wonder why this juror voted to exempt the officers if that's the way she felt. But that's what she said to CNN when she came out of the courthouse. Then I've got a couple of... Well, there's Ross Dinkowski. Let me get to Ross Dinkowski and Joycelyn Elders, and then we'll get started here. Mr. Ross Dinkowski, 17 charges, very, very serious charges, as you know, indicted yesterday. He is now in a dispute with his lawyer. This may be one of the reasons that I like Rosty at some level. He basically told Bennett, Bob Bennett, his attorney, or it is being reported that he's telling him to go to hell. That he doesn't need him, and he's probably going to discharge his attorney. And there's that, I think that's what I like. I mean, Ross Dinkowski is a fighter, and maybe he's guilty, maybe he's not. Court of law will decide that. But I do kind of enjoy the fact that he's not collapsing in front of the system that says basically, look, take this, you'll get charged with one little felony, you'll do 6 months, boom, boom, you'll be out. He's telling him to go to hell. And I think after watching the day's news today, that is the one thing that I do enjoy. Plus, I think it's going to be good for the country. Do you know what his excuse is going to be? His defense. CNN reported last night that Mr. Rostenkowski's defense is going to be the others do the same thing. It is going to be the others do the same thing defense. Well, if that's it, and he establishes in a court of law that, in fact, the others do the same thing, and he is convicted, then that really convicts all the rest of them, doesn't it? So I think this is going to be a fascinating trial, and I think in a way Ross Dinkowski is doing the country at large a very big favor indeed. Joycelyn Elders, everybody's favorite surgeon general, has done it again. Now, as you know, in the past she has said that homosexuals ought to be allowed to join the Boy Scouts. It's a good thing the Boy Scouts of America is not a government agency, isn't it? Or they'd be forced to accept homosexuals. Well, anyway, yesterday the Surgeon General said lesbians should be allowed to join the Girl Scouts. That's right. That's what she said. Lesbians ought to be allowed to join the Girl Scouts. Now, wouldn't you think there would be other things the Surgeon General could spend her time on? She wants to legalize drugs, put lesbians in the Girl Scouts, homosexuals in the Boy Scouts. Wonder what else she's got on her mind. Is that a public health kind of issue? Anyway, this Clinton administration really is something, isn't it? Well, let's see, what else have I... Oh, there is this. Swallow this. Here's a fax I received earlier today. Art Bell, did you hear about the UN report that came out today, which said they, the UN, wanted to collect a, quote, global income tax from citizens in rich countries to give to poor countries? This is from Lois in San Jose, and I have no way of confirming this. The UN wants to collect an income tax from rich countries to give to poor countries? Over my dead body. I wonder, and that, of course, may be the case, I wonder if this could possibly be true. Could they possibly be doing anything as communistic as this? Anyway, what do you think of that idea? True or not? Let's operate as though it were a global income tax that would hit all the rich countries, imposed by the UN to help all the poor countries. the people in Haiti, the people in Central Africa, the people in, we could go on and on, couldn't we? Parts of India, Bangladesh, they could all use, well, I'll tell you, that'd be some tax too, wouldn't it? I guess an attempt to equalize everybody, face of the globe. They're really pushing it, aren't they? So anyway, I don't know if that's true. It came from Lois in San Jose, and I had not heard it, but maybe some of the rest of you have. I've got a very strange story here from somebody. I think you might enjoy it. But I'm going to hold it. It's a story about light bulbs that unscrewed themselves. I mean, it's really a strange story, and I like strange stories. It's called The Case of the Unscrewed Light Bulbs, and it's an individual who wrote this story to me. And I'll get to it as time goes on. All right, what I want to do is get the telephone lines open. Anything is fair game, whatever it is that you would like to talk about. I'm ready for it, I think. Whether it's reflections on the Reverend Gentsch and what he had to say over the last couple of hours, any of the topics I just brought up, or any that you would like to broach on your own, we're open for any of it. So when we come back, it's two-way talk.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 1st of June, 1994.
And to the lines we go and two-way talk radio. Are you ready? On the wild card line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. I think old Ostankowski at the last minute, before he can keep that plea bargain agreement right up until the time the jury walks in with the verdict.
That might be right, yes.
And I think he'll probably at the last minute switch over. I'm pretty sure he would take a 6-month sentence versus maybe 100 and some years in jail.
Well, I'm not sure that the offer remains open after they actually go to court. I think he could probably take the agreement up until they walk into court.
They said today on the news that he can keep it right up until the time the jury walks in with the verdict.
Wow.
And he can go through the election process, get reelected, and string this out clear up until the time they walk in with the verdict.
Okay, but bear in mind, the prosecution does not have to continue to offer it or consummate the deal at all, at any moment. In other words, once they're in court, if it began to go the prosecution's way and Rosti saw that and came to him for the deal, they might tell him to go jump in a lake.
Well, the only problem is, you know, Janet Reno runs that operation. And I just don't have any faith in him at this time. One other thing that's rather interesting, I see on the World Report of some kind, I forgot the name of today, I was reading about it, that they put Egypt and Mexico as one of the major countries that is expected to disintegrate in the next few years. I wonder if any preparation is being made by this country to handle the influx of refugees that's going to come with their overpopulation running across our borders when that country does start to disintegrate.
We can't even handle the ones coming across now.
Well, I think they're going to have to get their population under control. We can't be the drain for the world's population problem. And I think that's Mexico's population. I was in Mozambique and Rhodesia, and I studied the population of Red China. When it collapsed, it had the same ratio of population that El Salvador had, and Angola had, and then Rhodesia had, and now Mexico has. Once it's 65-67% of the population is less than 18 years of age, the country starts to disintegrate quite rapidly. And that's the point that Mexico is at now. It had 27 million people in 1949. It has 90 million today, 65% less than 17 years of age, and the entire population will double in 14 years.
Wow. All right, I appreciate your call, sir. I've got to run. Thank you very much. But wow is my response. That's a big population burden. There is no question about it. And what will happen, I think, before it doubles again. On the toll-free line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Art. This is Steve from KNUS in Denver.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, I hear you talk about how much the government's wasting and Congress spending $1.50 for every buck. Let me tell you about another way I think we're wasting money. I just got off a four-month assignment of working for FEMA.
Oh?
I was served as a helpline operator here in Denver for victims of the Northridge earthquake.
Yes.
4 months I'm on the phones talking to about, I'd say at least 120 people a day taking their calls, wanting to know where their check is and how they can get their assistance.
Right, sure, sure.
Well, for the first month and a half, I'm talking to the truly needy. And for the next 3.5 months, it's just people whose neighbors got checks and they're wanting to report damages. And we have our inspectors went out to look at these properties. And aside from helping people get housed if they were rendered homeless, which is one thing which I think is legitimate, they were offering personal property grants. And if you had, like, damage to essential furnishings and major appliances and stuff, hey, look, you live on a fault line. You know what you're getting yourself into. Our inspectors go to a place, and this woman's like, yeah, my refrigerator's damaged.
I take it you didn't tell people that on the phone. Yeah, in other words, you live on a fault line, tough beans.
A couple people out of the thousands I've spoke to got really out of line with me, were blatantly greedy, bad liars.
Yeah.
And I told them straight up, look, pal, you lived on a fault line. If you had any real damages, you can just tell it to someone that gives a damn, and I'd hang up on them. But, you know, we got inspectors going to houses where...
I thought you FEMA guys, according to a lot of my callers, are the ones that are going to take over the U.S. in the middle of the night some night and turn us into a police state. Isn't that what you're all about?
Well, I'm what's called a local hire. FEMA set up a center here in Denver, and they had their regular people come, which is pretty much semi-retired people.
Yes.
And they're truly, at the level I was on, are good-hearted people who want to help out victims of disasters. So anything above the hierarchy in FEMA, I couldn't tell you anything about.
All right, sir. On that note, I'm going to have to leave you. Thank you very much for the call. And yeah, sure, we really all believe that, huh? You're going to probably be a captain in the new order, aren't you, FEMA guy?
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 1st of June, 1994. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 1st of June, 1994.
Good morning, everybody. Here's another fax. Dear Art, I'm worried. The last fax you read about the UN taking from the rich and giving to the poor is just sickening. I, however, haven't heard anything about it, so let's hope it's just a sick rumor. However, if it is true, could it be that communism is winning? It's times like these that we need Bush back in office. President Clinton sure isn't going to do anything about it. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it was his idea. North Korea. I'd be interested to know, if this becomes a global thermonuclear war, would you stand outside and watch the fireball envelop you, or would you seek shelter and try to live out a few more years? It would be an interesting question for your listeners as well. Thanks, Eric at KVI. Well, Eric, I would like to say that I would go out and throw my hands up and greet the fireball like a man. But, in fact, Eric, I'd probably be out scratching at the caliche in my yard trying to see how far down I could get out quickly. It wouldn't be easy. We have caliche here, and it's like trying to dig through rock. So I'm sure the fireball would greet me with shovels full of dirt flying behind me. Here's another. Hey, Art, consider this. More than a few Democrat apologists state the charges against Rostenkowski couldn't be true. They point out that Danny Boy passed up his chance to convert an excess of $1 million in campaign funds into personal funds. He could have, well, minus tax, of course. He could have done this had he retired prior to 92, since he passed this up. He obviously is not motivated by or interested in money. Horse stuff. The point is, these people, they miss it. It's so obvious. It's silly. Take a look at just the activities he was caught doing, and it is easy to see it's more profitable for him to stay in Congress. By staying in, not retiring, Danny retained the power and opportunity to steal far more than a paltry $1 million and fatten his pension up as well. Is this a great country or what? Sincerely, Stephen Burns. Thank you, Stephen. San Diego and the mighty Kogo. All right. Back to the telephone lines, and on the wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Hello.
It's Martin calling you.
Hello, Martin. Where are you?
Oh, I'm still out here in Oregon.
Oregon. What's on your mind, Martin?
Actually, I wanted to address a couple of important points here. This thing about the congressman.
Yes, Ross Dinkowski. What about him?
Well, it's going on today. With the congressman, which is taking all these gifts and presents and stuff, It's a common thing. What happened is happening today with the congressman we have in office. The only point I want to make about this is that they're going back 20 years. You see, there is no statute of limitations. In other words, someone can bring up a charge, and this is happening throughout the whole public, I guess. 15 or 20 years ago, somebody is going to bring up some kind of charge against you. And I don't really think that that's fair, that they should set some kind of...
Well, some of what they're charging Rostenkowski with is very current. It's not all back 20 years. A lot of it's very current, sir.
There's other trials.
I think the key here is his defense is going to be, look, everybody else did it. So... if he's convicted and he manages to prove his side of the case, he's convicting everybody else.
Well, I just think that they should have a statute of limitations. The other point that I wanted to hit is I've written another note off to the White House.
Oh?
Apparently, the White House responded. They read my last note.
Yes.
What we're waiting for here is, with this Korean problem, I guess this is going to be more important. You see, the atom bomb destroyed Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
I recall that, yes.
The single megaton is 10 times more destructive than the atom bomb. Our common medium-sized missile carries 10 megatons, or 100 times the destructive power of Hiroshima, before we start getting into kilotrons.
Right.
Now, what the Koreans are probably developed... is an atom bomb.
Yes.
The atom bomb we have pictures of, if anybody researches it. After the explosion, the actual explosion destroyed most of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but the radiation cloud and the effects of the radiation lasted for years.
What is your point?
The point is, if we allow the Koreans, they have a million soldiers, to develop one and get a missile, they'll probably fire it. I don't know whether they would just fire it into South Korea or they would fire it a little farther. Once that blows, of course, the whole North Korean force will start to move into South Korea.
All right, sir. We've got to hold it there. Thank you. Yes, I know the way it may go. We all know what the risk is. Glad I'm not living in Seoul. I'll say that much. Because that would certainly be the target. They'd certainly fire at Seoul. Boy, that would be an important Patriot shot, wouldn't it? Here she comes. Yes, sir, fire the whole battery. On the toll-free line, you're on the air.
I've been wanting to call you for a long time to ask you about a guy that used to have a radio program from... Las Vegas. His name was Billy Goodman, and it was a lot about flying saucers.
Yeah, he did a show like that some years ago now. And it's my understanding, he bounces back to Las Vegas every now and then, but he was back on the East Coast somewhere up in the Northeast.
Oh, I see. And then there was another thing. One time I heard you, it was years ago, and you were talking about ghosts.
Yes.
And spirits, and
yes.
You said there was some lady, I think it was in
Redmond. Yes. Oh, it sure
and
was.
Did you ever go to see her?
I tried to, as a matter of fact. She invited me to, said she was having a regular visit from a ghost.
Yeah.
She gave me her number. I talked to her at that number. And then when it came up to the weekend, when I was going to go down there, and I sure was, her phone didn't exist anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I called to make the final arrangements, and that's right, and her phone didn't exist. So you tell me.
Oh, well, you know, I just don't know, but I didn't get to hear all of it. And all these years, I've wondered.
Well, that's exactly.
Did you go and what happened?
I tried to go, ma'am. I tried.
Yeah.
All right.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much. Yes, I tried to go. Because if there are ghosts, and if they are the departed, that obviously proves that there is something beyond this life. It's not a trivial discovery. So I wanted to see for myself. On the wild card line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Mr. Bell, this is Nathan from Santa Cruz.
Hi.
Hi, I'd like to talk about this business about the Trilateral Commission that's been coming up on your show a little bit.
What about it?
Oh, I'd just like to say, regardless of whether or not there's it's a overt out conspiracy, there was something interesting written for it by a professor named Samuel Huntington.
It's not a conspiracy. If you want to know what the Trilateral Commission is doing, write to them and they will tell you.
I understand. But there was something kind of disturbing that was written for it about suggesting press censorship, and or it seemed to be suggesting something close to that. And I'm not going to try to, you know, obviously there's a lot of different people involved with it, and there's different viewpoints, but I do see where some of the concerns could be coming from. Well, anyways, I just wanted to call up and say that.
All right.
That's how it seems to me.
All right. Bye. Yeah. I don't know. They're out in the open about what they do, about what they want. That much is true. Everybody thinks it's some great big conspiracy. It's not. It's very much in the open. They'll tell you exactly what they're doing. Write to them. Try it yourself. On the wild card line, you're on the air.
Radio Free America.
Indeed.
How's it going, Art?
It goes well.
Listen, you know, I'm gonna ask you some things. I'm wondering, you know, I've been listening to Chuck Harder. He's now, you know, when you had that lightning storm, I'd switched channels on you.
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
And he's coming up with some pretty good stuff. I hope, you know, you can get some of these people he's interviewing on, like Reed. Great interview with him.
I think Harder's over the edge and has been for quite a while.
You do, huh?
Yes, sir, I do.
Well,
I listened to the Chuck Harder NAFTA hate show for months and months and months and months, and it got to the point where I thought it was absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I haven't heard him until recently, just this week, but he did bring to my attention that piece in The Economist. And there is some major allegations in that piece, and I urge all your listeners to pick up the
Yeah, The Economist is a very reputable publication. As a matter of fact, it's all over Europe.
Yeah, and it's a European magazine, Art.
Yes, I know.
A story of that magnitude is being suppressed in the United States. It's outrageous. It is outrageous. Our journalists are bought and paid for.
No, they're not.
Well, then why isn't anyone reporting on this story, Art?
Well, I think that our journalists are probably more, believe it or not, conservative. I spent some time in Europe, and they thrive. You think we have a lot of scandal here? They live on scandal. I mean, they're on scandal overload in Europe.
Well, I understand that, but, you know, when you've got three attempts on a man's life, and with a Clinton body count, it smells to high heaven.
Well, all right. Thank you. The Clinton body count. Now, what the hell does that mean? You can take anybody, as far as I'm concerned, and establish a body count around them. Anybody, let's say, who would, for example, head a major corporation, I would bet you that you could begin documenting a body count around that person. People who have something to do with that business, who have died, people who have committed suicide. There's a lot of suicides in this country. And I'm not saying there's not something to this whole Clinton story. I'm just not saying it's automatic that there is. nor have I seen proof that there is. So, I don't know. I'm kind of hesitant about all that sort of stuff, and I guess I'm from Missouri on that one. On the wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, Texas Bob, San Jose, California.
Hello.
How you doing?
Just fine.
We're listening to you tonight on KPNW, KEX, and KOH.
Three, huh? Okay.
Well, we start with KPNW and KEX and end up with KOH.
All right.
Gwench, interesting guy. My wife and I are both graduates of EST and found a lot of value in that, but found that there were some funny subliminal things that they tended to do that made you feel a little guilty and like you should contribute more time and more money to their cause.
I think, though, all religions kind of do that.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. It kind of reeked of Eastern brainwashing or something. I found an awful lot of Scientology to be a lot the same way, but I'll tell you, some of the most dramatic changes in my life came out of some views that I conjured from reading Dianetics.
Yeah, so, my view is that there probably is something to Scientology as a science. I don't know that I think of it very much as a religion. I think of Scientology more as a science.
Yeah, I think it tends to get a little confusing if you want to look at it as a religion, as a science, as a useful tool, I think, for some, you know, psychological shortcomings or questions or need. I think that
it's
quite helpful. It's been for me anyway. So I really want to thank you a lot for putting that fellow on and a couple of others that you've done recently. We still listen to you every day. I wish we could get in a lot quicker.
Well, I'm glad you made it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. From San Jose. Back to the lines now. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air.
Hey, Art, good morning. This is Vito in Alaska.
Well, hello. Where in Alaska are you?
I'm in Chugiak.
Chugiak, Alaska. Okay.
Okay. Now, Art, I want to talk to you about Ross Dinkowski, if I may.
You may.
You know, can you imagine that kid that gave him $1,000? Can you imagine what that kid, can you imagine what his dad is thinking right now?
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Remember that kid sent the president $1,000 for the national debt?
Yes, I do.
And you imagine what his father's saying right now to the kid? He's saying, well, gee, you know, we didn't know, and I thought that, can you imagine $1,000 for like a 13-year-old kid? That's a lot of money. Art.
It sure is. Oh, yes.
You know,
a lot of money to me.
Well, yeah, a lot of money to me, and you know, it's going to take a long time for the Congress to live this down because this makes all of them look bad.
Well, that's what I think is going to come out of this. I think that if there is a trial and Mr. Ross Dinkowski successfully proves his point, which he may, that he's not doing anything and everybody else isn't doing, and yet he is convicted with a very harsh jail sentence, then that convicts all of them.
Yeah, true enough.
All right, well, thank you very much. Chugiak, Alaska. And we are literally, blanket Alaska from one end to the other. And very glad to be up there, KENI, KFAR, and I could go through the other call letters. We're even now on Dreamland in Juneau, Alaska. On the toll-free line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art, Mike in Albuquerque. How you doing?
Just fine, Mike.
Were you serious about you would travel to see a ghost?
Oh, yes.
Well, I got just the place for you.
Where's that?
Okay, next time you get some vacation time, you and your better half pack up your bags and you travel to Cimarron, New Mexico.
What's there?
There's a hotel there called the St. James Hotel. It's a hotel that's been in existence for about 150 years.
Oh, we've got one here. It's called the Mizpah up northern Nevada.
Uh-huh, yep.
It's haunted, too, they say.
Well...
But, I mean, what guarantee... This lady told me this ghost was there all the time. She told me it was there when I would call her. It would be sitting there or standing there. I said, well, could I see the ghost if I came there? She asked the ghost. The ghost said, why, sure. And so it was like a sure thing.
Yeah.
Now.
But then she disappeared on you.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably vaporized.
At the St. James, it won't disappear on you. If you want to see something, you go.
But, I mean, how can you dependably know the ghost is going to show?
Because it shows up dependably. It shows up to people. It's not it. They. Strange phenomena take place in that hotel all the time. In fact, there's one room, room number 19. No one is allowed to stay in the room. They haven't barricaded off.
Really?
No kidding.
Ooh.
They say there's been over 122 people murdered in the hotel since the existence.
Aw, come on.
No, it was an Old West.
Oh, there's no single place where 122 people have been murdered.
Well,
come on.
It's been in existence for about 150 years, and it was one of the nicer hotels back in the days of the Old West, and a lot of people stayed there. And it's kind of like in Tombstone, Arizona. They have bullet holes preserved, you know,
yeah,
from the old days. But we were with a group of people who saw a strange vaporous object in the corner one breakfast morning, and you got me on what the hell that was.
Well, I'd love to see such a thing. I'd really love to.
You should go. You'd enjoy it. And it's great food, too.
All right.
Get out of the desert, see the mountains.
All right. Okay, well, thank you very much for the call. Maybe I'll, you never know, maybe I'll do that. I mean, the lady in Redlands was just so intriguing because it was such a reliable thing, and then it all, of course, vaporized right before my eyes on a Friday. On the wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, this is the mighty KDWN in Las Vegas. How are we doing, Art?
Just fine, sir.
Yeah, I just want to thank you. It's refreshing to hear somebody on the radio, especially talk radio, who has a good healthy dose of skepticism about these conspiracy and murder spheres and things like that. It just gets a little crazy after a while, and it's nice to hear somebody say, hey, you know, let's get some proof, and coincidences do happen, you know, and I just want to thank you for that.
Thank you. I'm very interested in proof.
Thank you. Another thing, I heard Larry Nichols speaking of that on the Chuck Carter show, and he explained the reason why he wouldn't be on your show.
Oh, what did he say?
The only reason he gave is it's too late at night, and he wants to sleep. That's it.
Really? No.
I wanted to get on that show.
Did
so
he
bad.
Really say that? I mean, somebody called him up on Harder and said, why don't you go on Art Bell? And he said, because it's too late?
No, he just brought it up as part of his conversation.
Oh, you mean he brought it up?
He brought it up. He said, yeah, this Art Bell's been trying to get a hold of me, and the only reason I won't go on a show is it's too late.
Oh, I see. Well, at least finally we have an explanation. Mr. Nichols can't stay up late.
Oh, that floored me. It really did. This guy really sickens me. These guys are digging a hole, and you're right. Eventually something legitimate is going to come out, and everybody's going to say, yeah, right. It's like the rest of the stuff. You know?
That's it. I mean, this stuff is just too fantastic. And people, what happens to people is they get a kind of a scandal overload.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what is it going to be if something serious comes along, but it'll seem rather mundane.
Exactly.
Yeah, compared to some of this.
Last thing I want to thank you about is you got the guts to have no screener, and I really appreciate that. It's frustrating to hear mega ditos every time somebody picks up the phone.
Appreciate your call, sir.
You got it.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
That's Las Vegas. Well, look, I think this is real talk radio. It's as real as it gets, and I think there ought to be any talk host out there worth his salt ought to be good enough to be able to tackle whatever comes along, whatever it is. I mean, you may or may not have knowledge in a certain area, but if you don't screen your calls, there's a certain magic that's there that is the real talk radio. That's what I think, and it's the spontaneous nature of not knowing what's next. It's like a great adventure. That's exactly what it's like, a great adventure. Talk radio. Every program I do is that way. You never know what it's going to be, and I like it that way. Anyway, that's our brand of talk radio. It's called Coast to Coast AM.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Here's a fax from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Art. Just listened to Michael Reagan, or the Michael Reagan tape from this afternoon. This is part of what he said about the UN tax, 0.1% global tax to improve global living standards. Proceeds to go to the poorest countries. Income tax on the richest countries. The countries with an average of $10,000 per year or more per person would pay tax. Our American UN rep said, we need a global safety net for the poor. A global safety net for the poor. He read much more, but would take too long to copy. Well, there it is anyway. So I guess it's true. Michael Reagan read the report on his show today. That's Diane in Spokane. KSBN. Are they out of their minds? Are they absolutely out of their minds? They lost their minds? What's the matter with them? We're going to kick in part of all the money we make so that poor nations around the world can have a safety net? You know, my reaction to this really wouldn't be suitable for the radio. On the wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
I'm calling from Kenosha, WLIP.
In Wisconsin. Yes, hi there.
And my name is Rita.
Hi there.
I would like to say that I ordered both of your T-shirts.
Oh, you did?
And they are beautiful. But I do have to tell you some things, and it's kind of comical. I had one of yours, the City of Knives, there, and people would come up and say, what religion is that?
What religion?
Yes.
Tell them it's a cult.
Well, I don't want to end up in jail.
Or with a tank at your front door.
Right. What I did want to talk to about dipping into things that they're not supposed to in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
All the union money and pension money is also being dipped into.
Mm.
A matter of fact, one of it is where they're going to make housing for the poor that is going to be established. I think it's been Pennsylvania.
Right.
And I don't know how much money it is on a whole. So it isn't just the Social Security or anything else. They're just dipping into anything that's there.
Anything that's there, sure, whatever they can do, huh?
Yeah, and it's really a bad, because I guess it's the railroad fund that's really being hit right now. And this is money that these people are planning on living on that are retired. So I don't know what they're going to do after that's gone. Are they just going to cut the pension and these people aren't going to get anything?
Sure is a good question. I don't have the answer for you, but I know that at some point there is going to be a crunch point.
Well, I think there's going to be a point where all these people, everything is just boiling up to such a point that maybe they're going to be not rational at all. And I'm just so worried about that. I mean, as you have talked to on the show several times, this is not the way to go.
Well, I certainly agree. I want to thank you for the call and also the plug for the T-shirts.
Yes. If anybody is really thinking of ordering, they are just so beautiful, and they're worth every penny you pay for.
Yeah, I'll tell you another secret about those T-shirts. They don't shrink.
Well, we're in the laundry business and dry cleaning business. This is our business that we do have. And I always like to test things right away, because if I do, then I'll order more. If I don't, these I have a certain amount of polyester in there that will eliminate shrinking. You could just wash these things over and over and never worry about your little grandchildren wearing them.
Huh.
Because they do, and they hold the shape beautifully. I mean, most of these T-shirts, you know, once you get them on, they're hanging here and there. But these wash up just gorgeous.
Well, I'm sure glad to hear it, and I feel like I ought to give them a plug, and I can't find the number right now. Do you remember what the number is to order those?
No, I don't. I got it from you, and I wrote it someplace, and then I called him up immediately. He says, oh, you're almost the first one that called.
All right. Well, listen, thank you. I really appreciate it. I'm glad you enjoy the shirts. They are special.
Yes, and please keep up the good work. And by the way, I did order one of your shortwave radios.
Oh, good for you.
Because we do not get your station. You know, we have to wait later. And I thought that could we get it in shortwave if we're here in Wisconsin, or wouldn't it reach that far?
Not yet, but this program is not yet on shortwave.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't get that. I am on shortwave, and you might hear me.
Well, when segment, Sherwood.
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of times when I get off my live segment in about 52 minutes, I will go on ham radio on shortwave.
Okay, I ordered one of those radios that I guess is supposed to be one of the best. I guess it's $254.95.
Right. The 818CS. You're going to be really, really happy.
Well, I hope it's not real complicated because I am the most uncomplicated, mechanically inclined person you've
ever. Well, there's one good thing about the Z.
You know, I have to tell you, these people are just so wonderful. I explained that I'm not very mechanically inclined.
Right.
And they said, don't worry. He says, you could call us at any time with a toll-free number. If
that's
you
right.
have any problems, just call us.
They'll even sit on the phone and tell you how to operate.
That's what
it.
They said.
Yep, they will do it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Art.
Take care. Kenosha, Wisconsin. Yeah, you might hear me all the way up there. Sure, I get on ham radio every now and then. I love ham radio. I love radio, period. I'm a radio nut, period. And I'll probably do it again this morning. I'll get on, I'll tell you where I am. I'm on the 75 meter band. And the frequency I usually pop on is, 3892. 3892. So if you're a ham and you can get on the 75 meter band, pop on to 3892 about 5 minutes after, I get off the air. I'll crank up the shortwave rig here. And see who's around. Some nights many, some nights not. So if you're a ham radio operator, pop on there and I'll say hello. And, if you're just a listener, listen to that frequency and you never know, you might hear me. It's lower sideband. 3892, lower sideband. And on the, toll-free line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about Linda Thompson and I'm from Phoenix, KFYI.
Yes, sir.
And, in the afternoon show, they had a guy, he was the president of the John Birch Society.
Oh, yes, I've had him on myself.
And he was talking about Linda Thompson.
Yes, I have their position paper on Linda Thompson, and they feel, as I do, that it is very dangerous, and they have advised their members of exactly that fact. And they have a whole position paper on Linda Thompson, so there you go.
Yeah, he even thought maybe she worked for the government.
Yes, I know. They feel that.
And, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine, and he said the same thing about 4 days before I heard this conversation. So it got me to thinking, you know. And about this gun control, they talked a little bit about gun control.
Well, maybe it is karma in some way, because Linda Thompson has said of many of her critics that she thinks they work for the government. So now they're accusing her of working for the government.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's said that of people who have criticized her. So, you know, maybe it's karma.
Well, you know, I was thinking about gun control. And,
a lot of
mother, huh?
I was going to say a lot of people think I work for the government.
Oh, well.
CIA, you know?
Well, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you do, you're a blessing to the agency.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I was thinking about gun control, and my mother told me something I never forget. We was discussing, we was watching this Bill Donahue thing, and one of our sheriffs from Arizona is challenging the Brady Bill. And she said something to me, it really struck home. She said, you know, they gripe about the gun that fires the bullet, but not the finger, not the person with the finger holds the trigger.
Right.
And, you know, that got me to thinking, then today with Rodney King, when the jury came out and said, well, punitive damages, he's not going to get anything. So I was just wondering, what happened if they started rioting again, and the people, I think California have to wait 15 days, you know, and so I was just wondering, thank God we do have guns, and here in Arizona, we all pretty much carry guns. Not everyone, but a lot of ranchers. We have a lot of ranchers out here and things
sure.
like that.
Sure. And it's the same all the way across Western America. Guns are just sort of there. They're not. It's not any big deal.
Yeah. And then I was out camping a couple weeks ago, and I was in Circle K, and these three guys come in. I was buying something for my camp, and these three guys come in with sidearms right on their hips. And
sure.
I didn't think a thing about it. I felt very safe.
Yeah, it's not that unusual. All right, thank you very much for the call. That's right. It's just the bad guys and guns you got to worry about, not the good guys and guns. Listen, I did find it, and these are really rare, these T-shirts. So I'm going to give them a free plug here, because you don't get to hear it on this program. The T-shirts are only advertised on Dreamland. He ought to be advertising here, too, the more I think about it. Man, maybe I'll talk to him about that. But they are Dreamland T-shirts, and there are Kingdom of Nigh T-shirts. And they're in these incredibly high-quality T-shirts. And the artwork is done by Dave Archer, who did all the artwork, or a lot of the artwork, for Star Trek. So that tells you how neat they are. And it has my name, I think, and Kingdom of Nigh, and the other one has Dreamland. And they've just suddenly absolutely blown up in popularity. Anyway, if you want one of those, there is a 24-hour number. It's 1-800-241-6036. Never seen anything take off like that. 1-800-241-6036. On the wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, this is Marie in Marysville.
Hi, Marie.
I tried to reach you when you had that guy from Scientology on.
That guy was the president of Scientology.
Yes. You aren't really interested in that, are you?
Well, no. I mean, not as in personally involved. I'm interested in it, Marie, as I am in just about anything else. You know, I have an open mind.
Well, I believe that you should believe half of what you see, a quarter of what you read and hear.
That's healthy, yes.
But in four books now on different things, I like to read biographies. I've heard that L. Ron Hubbard started in witchcraft in England.
Really?
Yeah, and that really bugs me.
Well, I hadn't heard that.
So, but on another subject, the one child up here that had that infection that was the same in England was actually five.
Five people?
Five children.
Five children in Seattle? Are you serious?
Yes. So far they had the four that have had the surgery and they're out and fine.
Good Lord, where did you hear this?
It was on the news, on all the channels.
Oh, my.
And they're telling people to be very careful.
Another cluster. Huh?
Yeah, my daughter had just 4 days ago, her roommate has a little boy, and she was going to expose him to the chickenpox, and I told her, no, don't.
No, I wouldn't choose this. Boy, oh boy, that's really something.
When I talked to her tonight, she was very glad she hadn't. It goes in through staph infections on your skin.
Well, I understand that it is something they claim that we all have in the back of our throats.
Well, the staph germ is on everybody's skin, on the outside also. And believe it or not, you can get staph infection in your kidneys from giving hickeys.
From giving hickeys?
Yes, my son got some. But you have to be very careful with staph infections. That's why it's a good idea to wash your hands.
Oh, I suppose. All right, thank you very much, Marie. So then they probably call it the hickey disease. Huh? Well, look, I tell you all, swallow all this with a drop of skepticism. It may be absolutely true, but I don't want to panic anybody, but this is getting to be a little silly, isn't it? Do you believe what the government's saying about this? Little clusters of this disease. It's always been around. They've had this before. It's no big deal. The old eating human flesh, whatever it is, no big deal. Be calm. Be safe. Our government will take care of us. Boy. On the toll-free line, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello? Going once, going twice, three times. On the wild card line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. How you doing?
Just fine.
Good, very good. Very strange disease, this thing.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. I just want to let you know that you're our favorite radio friend here at KPNW.
Thank you.
And I had a sort of a Dreamland story for you, but it's not Dreamland.
All right.
It's a very weird incident. It's the weirdest thing that happened to me last year.
Okay.
I had a dream, me and my sister. In my dream, me and my sister are traveling from New Jersey to Eugene, Oregon on a bus, on a Greyhound bus. We stop, like, in Laramie, Wyoming, right?
Right.
And my sister has an apartment in Laramie, but it's in Eugene on a street down by the university. And we go there, and suddenly I realize I forgot my backpack. I'm fretting over this. Everything I have in this world is in this backpack. I am so stressed out. We got to get back to the Greyhound station.
Yes.
We're running down the street. A helicopter knocks over a bunch of power lines. We can't cross the street. We got to go a mile out of our way. I'm just, my backpack, did I leave it on the bus? Did I leave it in the Greyhound station? Did someone pick it up? Did someone steal it? Did they turn it in? Get back to the Greyhound station. I'm looking for my backpack. I wake up. So that, it's a dream, right? I go down to my mailbox, get my mail. I get a package from my sister. I open it up, and it's a birthday present. I open up, there's some cards in there. There's a couple of T-shirts. I pull out a package. I'm like, what's this? It was a backpack.
Wow.
And she didn't tell me nothing about it, Art. Nothing.
Well,
I didn't even know there was a package coming from her. It came about a week after my birthday.
Well, maybe you're a prophet.
No, I just think that, you know, we all are touched by dreams sometimes, you know, precognition or precognition, things like that.
The prophet?
And this was one of those for me, one of those moments for me, you know.
We'll call you the Bronx prophet.
Yeah, okay, well, maybe, you know, the microchip guy, I don't know, you know, whatever.
All right, listen,
I was just listening to my Gold Rose Tuner radio, which sounded great.
Well, of course it did.
It sounded more wonderful than ever.
All right, sir, thank you. That's our Bronx prophet. Has dreams. Keep us up to date on the dreams, please. On the wild card line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art, from KVI country.
Yes, sir.
Did you by any chance get a fax today from someone up in this area who is a newly elected NRA board member?
No, sir, I did not.
Concerning your attempt to get a hold of Wayne LaPierre,
Wayne.
Is in the works.
Oh, is it?
I was told by a mutual friend yesterday, and we're all members of the country's second largest gun club up here in Washington.
Yes, sir.
That, well, none of these guys but me stay up and listen to you, so I spread the word not only to the NRA directly, but to all my friends, and one of whom just attended the NRA board meeting and got himself elected as a board member.
Wow.
And surprisingly enough, he brought it up, and Wayne LaPierre had not heard about it.
Well, you know, that doesn't surprise me.
Somebody has been dropping the ball and either insulating him on purpose or just plain dropping the ball and not giving him the message.
Oh, I think there are some people under Wayne LaPierre who are angry with me because I refuse to accept anybody but Wayne LaPierre, and so they've got a kind of a vendetta going. And listen, I'm coming up on a break. Can you hold on?
Yes.
All right, fine. You're on hold, and we're going to break. This is Coast to Coast AM on the CBC Radio Network. I'm Art Bell. Stay right where you are.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 1st of June, 1994.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the most widely distributed all-night radio program in America. You see, I believe that is the case. And so, of course, if Wayne LaPierre knew, he would come on. And so I agree with this caller that he's insulated. And I'm sure that I ticked somebody off at NRA, because they called me repeatedly for a while and said, how about this director or this regional director or that person? And at first I politely told them, well, thank you, but it is Wayne LaPierre that I would like to have. I've had many of these other people in the past from the NRA, and I think the situation is, I really explained all this to them. I think it's so critical right now with regard to the Second Amendment guns in America that I'd like to have the man himself on. And I think we're big enough to more than justify that appearance. And I think that I ticked the guy off, frankly. He finally got angry with me. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all, but that there is some sort of insulation going on. And you're back on the air again, sir.
Right. Okay. Well, the word I've got is that Wayne now knows that you want to have him on the show and says, oh, hell yes, I'll come on.
Oh, good.
So sometime soon somebody will be getting a hold of you. I passed your fax number on to this new director, and I was asked if there is a phone number that you answer during the day, but...
Well, there is, but I can't give it out here. I'd be glad to give it to you privately.
Okay.
So I'd be glad to do that. And yes, I'm sure that is the case. Maybe some of it is my fault, because I was fairly hard in my position that I wanted Wayne LaPierre, and I know it got them angry. Well, that's the way it goes.
Well, when you get him on, I hope I can get through, because I want to talk to him personally myself. I've got a few complaints of my own.
All right, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you. Wayne LaPierre is actually a pretty effective spokesperson. I thought in this last battle, though he lost it, over the assault weapons, though it's not totally lost yet, I might add, by the way, since crime bill is not signed, sealed, and delivered, I thought he did a pretty good job of arguing against it, a pretty effective job. So I have no quarrel with Wayne LaPierre personally. It's just some of the staff at NRA, and I should add, I'm a member, continuing as a member of NRA. I just, you know, we've got millions of people here at night listening to this program. And it's a pretty significant audience of people who would have a lot of sympathy with what he would have to say, and he could motivate an awful lot of people. So it wouldn't make sense that he would not come on unless he didn't know. On the toll-free line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Am I talking to the Art Bell program?
Yes, you are.
Okay, thank you. What do I do now?
Well, that's up to you.
I'd like to speak to Art Bell.
Okay, press 4 on your touch-tone telephone now.
Okay.
This is Art Bell. Hi.
Good evening, Art Bell.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Am I on the air with you?
Why, yes.
Okay, thank you. I've heard several of your callers discussing this disease that apparently has come in from London.
Yes.
Into Seattle. And I'm afraid I have not heard a thing about it. Can you please brief?
Well, I cannot give you a lot of news about it. I can tell you're familiar with what they said about the disease in Europe.
No, I'm sorry.
You're not. Okay. It is.
To me, that's why I'm asking. Give me a brief rundown on...
Well, it is apparently some mutated or virulent form of a bacterial agent that we all have with us, and somehow it changes, and then when it does, it will eat the fat and the muscle of the human body within 24 hours.
My God.
Yeah, that's what I say, too.
And this started in Europe or London or what?
Well... The governments are saying that, why, it's nothing new, they say. They've had it before. It comes in clusters, and there is nothing to worry about. Now, I'm worried. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm worried, and I don't believe them, actually.
I'm sorry. You know, I'm 63 years old. I've never heard of this. But I'm sorry. I just missed whatever came on the news. Or if it was on the news, this is the first I've heard about this. And I'm just asking, since I'm only turning into you this evening, could you give us a brief background? Or?
All right. Well, I've almost told you what I know. Thank you very much for the call. I would say, first of all, to be cautious, because I have only callers with regard to the stories about Seattle. I don't know how much of that is so, and you have to always be cautious, but I've now had a couple of calls, and so, you know, it begins to give some credence to it, some credibility, but it's still just a couple of people who have called, and, you know, rumors are rumors, and you never know what's true and what's not. We will check it out. Pretty odd stuff, huh? I always picture roughly the beginning of The Stand, you know, some scientist with a vial in his hand, holding it up, looking at little bitty teeny crawly things crawling around in the vial, and then somebody startling the scientist, oops, crunch on the floor, and then a bunch of human bodies just all chewed up. And it's loose on the world. Of course, I imagine the worst. So I don't know, but this may be real, and if I were you all, I would stay close to this story and continue to follow this story. And when you hear government people saying not to worry, worry. On the toll-free line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. This is KPAY Chico.
Chico, yes, sir.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the staphylococcus infection.
Yes, okay, good. I'm sure the lady who was just on will appreciate that.
Okay, well, it's not a mutated form. It's a common bacteria that's in the back of her about, from 3 to 10% of people at all times.
In your throat, yes.
Yes, in your throat. And it's not a mutated form. And you probably have heard about it before, only for a long time they... a lot of people refer to it as blood poisoning. And
blood poisoning doesn't eat your skin and flesh and muscle.
Well, it does, because most cases of what they refer to as blood poisoning is actually a staphylococcus infection. And there's been a lot of people die from them, cutting yourself, shaving, like a famous person died from it that went in the tombs. They tried to say it was the curse of the pharaohs and all that.
Oh, that was actually the staph infection?
That was the staph infection. And it doesn't come in clusters, but what happens is that every once in a while they have a statistical cluster.
Statistical? Yeah, that's right. That's what they're calling it, a statistical cluster.
Right. And so, you know, every once in a while it pops up in clusters, but usually it pops up in single cases. And in most cases, it's usually diagnosed as blood poisoning. And actually, there is no such thing as actual blood poisoning. It's a staphylococcus infection. And so, you know, it's been around for years and years. It's just that in most cases it doesn't get, as well publicized.
I don't know if I believe all that. I'm sorry, but I just don't know that I believe it. I've been around for a while, and I've not heard about any disease that eats away at the human flesh the way this... And I've seen the pictures, too.
There's a lot of diseases that, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily hear about every day. There's a lot more horrible diseases floating around than this staphylococcus infection. And we don't necessarily hear about them. And especially when they're in third world countries and stuff like that. It's just that up until now, until the abuse of antibiotics usually is caught in time, because one of the first signs is the same sign that there is when you have blood poisoning.
Yeah, and that is the traditional treatment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Large doses of antibiotics,
right.
And in radical cases, surgery.
Mm-hmm. And when it first starts out, you get an infected cut or sore,
yep.
And little red lines start leading up your arm or through the veins, up towards you. You know, same symptoms as blood poisoning.
Reaching for your brain.
And usually when people see that, they go to the doctor and the antibiotics take care of it before it has a chance.
That or your left arm falls off.
Well, that's...
All right, sir, I've got to run. Thank you. Yeah, I suppose. You know, it may be true. I mean, it may have been around for a long time. No big deal. Nothing to worry about. But I've seen some of the pictures. And I'll tell you, it looks like a big animal took a bite out of some of these people. Untreated, it consumes the muscle and fat of a human being in 24 hours. 24 hours. And you're gone. Been around. Nothing to worry about. Yeah, right. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art Bell, how in the world are you?
Very well, sir.
Good. I appreciate your candidness, and you're just not satisfied with topical answers, are you?
No.
I was listening to your guest on earlier, and he's typical of so many religious leaders. You know, they never really address the real questions in life.
Like what?
Well, for example, who am I?
Who
what
are,
am I?
Well, yes.
What's the meaning to life? There's a good one. Why is there suffering? Well, why and what is evil? Where's God when I really need him? Like in a tragedy or disease.
Well, I'm sure the religious folk would say it's a test. You're being tested. You're here to suffer, you know?
Well, there's a good topical answer.
You're here to suffer. I mean, it is a test. Your human life is nothing but a test for the next level. How about that?
Well... if God's real, why can't I find him?
Well, because he's God and he doesn't want to be found.
Well, I thought he was big.
He is. He's everywhere. God is everywhere.
It's kind of nonsense, really.
Maybe.
Well, Jesus.
On the other hand, I'd be careful about saying that, because what if you're wrong?
Well, Art, I don't want you to misunderstand me. I've been a student of religion and philosophy for years. I do believe in God very deeply. And Jesus Christ...
Well, I know, but then I'd be careful about saying it's nonsense.
Well...
I mean, they may have an 818 CS up there and be recording this, and you may have to answer for that.
Well, if he lives in me, which the Scripture says, Christ in you, the hope of glory, Paul said, I live, yet not I, Christ in me.
Yes.
Jesus knew the answer, and he gave it to us in a nutshell. They said, who are you? He said, well, I am. I am the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. I am the bread of heaven. He knew who he was, without a doubt. And he came to demonstrate that fact to all of us. He was our mirror. He showed us who we are.
Well, then, why are you asking me questions that you already have the answer to?
Well, here's the thing, is I'm really disillusioned with the systematized religion. What I see on TV, what I hear... You know, Dianetics, they give topical answers, Art, and you're the kind of man who's not satisfied with that. And I'm not really asking these types of questions because I believe I've found them, and they are in Scripture. But I'm upset that I watch TV and I watch these preachers, and they give such surface answers, and they put psychological trips on people. Heaven, hell, all of that, you're going to burn and... forever and never giving any answers to why did I have a tragedy in my life or where's God when I really need him.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for the call. But again, you're asking questions that you have the answer for. I think God is there, but I doubt that he involves himself in every small detail, and it is my view, just kind of a view, that events are roughly random on this earth, and some will be challenged greatly and suffer, and others will sort of skate through it, and that God is not orchestrating each little thing that occurs to you. But he's there, kind of an overall there. Oh, I don't even know how to talk about all this. To our toll-free line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi.
This
is Gloria in Crescent City, California.
Hello, Gloria.
I just want to make one quick comment to correct some misinformation people are giving you.
Okay.
The bacteria responsible for that little cluster disease.
Yes.
Is not staph, it's streptococcus.
Streptococcus.
Right.
Okay.
That's a big difference.
Have you heard about any cases in Seattle?
No, I'm not in Seattle.
No, I'm asking if you've heard of any cases in Seattle.
No, I haven't heard about any cases in America.
Period. Right.
I thought it was localized in England.
So did I.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well,
I did hear Dr. Dean Adele on his national syndicated show say much the same thing as an earlier caller did, that it's nothing new.
Mm.
It's not common, but it's nothing new.
Mm.
I mean, you know, it's a few isolated cases here and there.
Well,
it's streptococcus.
It's pretty odd stuff. All right, thank you, streptococcus. Whew. Eating the flesh. Chewed up like an old rag. Falling apart like the picture of Dorian Gray. What a nightmare. On the wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Jose in Honolulu.
Hello, Jose.
How are you today?
Fine, just fine.
I guess they want worldwide welfare, huh, Art?
Oh, I tell you, you know, that's almost hard to talk about because it makes me so angry. I'm probably going to say something I shouldn't say. I don't know if I believe it.
Like, could you just imagine the bureaucracy on that puppy?
you know, if, I mean, what's the UN trying to do? Are they really trying to tick us off? Do you honestly think the American people are going to stand for this?
I know.
I think they've lost their minds.
Obviously. Well, if they got Clinton in there, you know.
Well, I'm sure it's something he'd like.
I'm sure it would be.
Master plan. Boy, I'll tell you.
You know, I don't think Clinton's ever met a tax he didn't like, you know.
Well, we'll talk more about this tomorrow. When I got my first facts on the subject, I just couldn't believe it. I didn't believe it, frankly. Now I find out Michael Reagan has read this also, so it seems to confirm it. I think they've lost their minds,
yeah.
Jose. That's all I can say.
And about Korea.
Yes.
If I were the president, what I would do is forget about the sanction things, because that's not going to work.
No.
I would just make a very public thing and just line up a whole bunch of short-range nuclear missiles on that 38th parallel, and so the North Koreans would know they were serious about things. And hopefully Clinton won't blink.
Well, that's pretty hopeful.
Yeah, well.
Jose, I would say...
I mean, nobody wants a war, Art, let's face it.
Nobody wants a war. You're darn right they
yeah.
don't. Thank you very much, Jose, in Honolulu. Nobody wants a war, but depending on Clinton not to blink, no, not me. In fact, you could almost depend on him to blink. Our foreign policy is a joke. He literally came out last Saturday and said, what am I doing wrong? What's wrong with my foreign policy? I need to look at my foreign policy and decide what it is the American people don't like about it. I don't like anything about his foreign policy. The one good decision he's made was going back on his campaign promise and giving MFN to China. On the toll-free line, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
Hey, I got one thing. You know, I got this world welfare. Why do we have to be the country that always has to go in and try to survive the world?
You mean try to help out the rest of the world?
Yeah, I mean, if the country can't make it on their own, it's not our responsibility for me to work my butt off every day, 5 days a week, and then I have to turn around and give my hard-earned money to somebody like in South Africa or South America that shouldn't, instead of having, like, Sally Struthers gets on the TV and says, well, don't you want to give these people more money so you can help these kids out?
Yeah.
You know what I say? Sterilize more of the women down there.
You know what I always thought would be a good idea? Give food to the rest of the world, but put birth control in it.
That's it.
And tell them right up front, all right, look, free food, but warning, there is birth control in it. If you still want food, let us know. That way they know what they're getting. And we're getting something in return for our food. But, of course, that'd be considered Nazi-like, so we don't do it.
Yeah, everybody, you know, when I was born and raised, my dad was raising me. There's one thing my dad always told me.
What?
And when I got back from Vietnam, I thought the government owed me something. One thing my dad always said, nobody gets a free ride. Everybody is born into this world to accomplish something, and nobody just sits back and lives off the money of somebody else.
Well, your dad had what seems to be vanishing wisdom, my friend. I've got to go. My program is ending. Thank you. That makes me so angry that I'm afraid to actually talk very much about this. But I'll look into it more, and we'll talk more tomorrow morning. Welfare for the world. Well, I'll tell you, they can just... 3892 actually is where I'm going to be. I'm going to crank up the shortwave now, 3892. Thank you all. Another good night of talk radio. We'll be back tomorrow, whatever time you normally join us. Thank you. Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night.